Well, guys, it's almost time, so why don't we get started? Good afternoon, everybody. And my name is Louis Herrera, and to my right is, what's his name again? Oh, I'm sorry, to my left is Roger Peterson. Hi, Roger. And today we have Chris Park and Doug Joffrey from GW Micro.
Joffrey is a G or
GW? Yeah, Doug Joffrey is a G from GW Micro, makers of that famous program called Window Eyes. I was asking Doug if I was going to get an upgrade to my WordTalk program for my Apple IIe, but he kind of laughed it off. I guess that they don't support that anymore. You know, what can we say? I guess good programs are hard to kill. Anyhow, today we're going to have – I'm going to turn the microphone over to Chris, and Chris will turn it over to Doug to demonstrate Window Eyes and what Window Eyes is. For those of you that don't know, and for those of you that know and are curious to know what makes Window Eyes different from JAWS or Dolphin, if you're a Dolphin or a JAWS user – what kind of features does it have? How does it deal with the up-and-coming standards that Vista will impose on all of us? I think that Doug is going to really give you guys an inside look as to a program that I have to admit, I'm a born-again GW user, GW Micro user. I used to use Vocal Eyes, and as I said, way back before it was even GW Micro, there was a small company in Fort Wayne, Indiana called Computer Rates Corporation, and they came out with programs for the Apple IIe.
Those were grim times.
Yeah, the grim times. And yes, I was one of the users way back when, with the Echo PC and the Echo 2 and so on and so forth. Anyhow, I'm going to turn the microphone.
She's going to show us their new video magnifier at the CCCL session before, too.
Oh, that's right. Chris is also going to be here for the CCCLV. I got to get so many C's in there.
55 Roman numerals.
Yeah, Roman numerals 355. I don't know if that's the combined age of all the members or what, but anyhow. Chris will be demonstrating the Sans view for those of you that are partially sighted. I used to have good enough vision to see those things and use them. I don't anymore, but what I've seen of it, if I can see something with it, I'm sure that you guys with better vision can really take advantage of it. So I think you guys should be glad that he's here to demonstrate a nice little tool that's portable and affordable. Okay, I'm going to turn the microphone over to Chris Park, and so I will shut up now. And Chris, go ahead.
Thank you, Louis. But the today's presentation going to be done by Mr. Doug Joffrey. Okay, Doug? All
right. Boy, he gets to sit up here for that?
Again.
Unable to root.
Whoops, unable to root. Bumped my keyboard. Hopefully everybody can hear me, and as I actually start demonstrating this, you'll be able to hear the synthesizer. But I guess I have the next 5 hours here that I can just talk about Window Eyes. But I'll sum it up in about an hour here or something. But I don't know how many of you are familiar with Window Eyes or how technical you are with a lot of the things that have been changing from Microsoft. They really kept us busy last year. But my goal here is to kind of give you an overview real quickly, especially the latest version of Window Eyes. What's so special about our latest version, which actually we'll be releasing our 6.1 version here, probably maybe if we're lucky tomorrow, if not probably early next week sometime that we'll actually officially announce its release. But I want to kind of go over where Window Eyes is today. I definitely want to talk about Vista. That's a small little thing Microsoft threw at us last year, or actually this year, right, January 30th. Yep. And then also Office 2007, which is another small little product Microsoft threw at us last year. It was actually again released the same time as Vista on January 30th. How all of that stuff works, the new ribbon thing, the new interface that everybody's talking about with the new Office, and how all that works with Window Eyes. And Window Eyes, of course, will be coming along for the ride, and hopefully you'll be able to pick up some ideas and techniques and things that Window Eyes does. But one of the things that, that excites me the most is, as Louis was saying, I've been in this business for, I don't know, it's early 80s sometime. I started with Computer Aids Corporation, 82, somewhere around that range, 81, 82. And in all of the time that I've been in this industry, I've never seen a major operating system, like a Windows operating system, release and on that same day have support for a screen reader. And WindowEyes, I believe, in my knowledge since early 80s, was the first to do that. So on January 30th, when Microsoft released Vista, WindowEyes, GW Micro released a WindowEyes public beta version that fully supported Vista on that same day. So I think that's history in the making, and we're very proud of that. We've since released one more public beta, and that just kind of fine-tuned some things. Part of the reason we wanted to do a public beta is that there were very few users using Vista with WindowEyes. We have a private beta team of about 60, but of those, maybe two had Vista, access to Vista, and then, of course, we had access to it as well. But that's not a good user base to just plop out a new version and say, here it is. With GW Micro, whenever we do release a version, we make sure that it's a stable product. It does what it says. We don't want to have to put out another patch a week later and another patch for that patch another week later and just keep going. So we like to get some good feedback, and so far the public beta feedback has been extremely positive. And as I said, we'll be able to release the final official 6.1 here within less than a week, I'm sure, that will come out. And that's the version that I'm actually going to be showing here as well. So we are at WindowEyes 6.1, the version that I will be showing, and as I said, that will be released very shortly. The cost of WindowEyes is $895. And that includes everything that we're talking about. There are no hidden fees or costs or anything like that, depending on what you want to be able to do. And that does support Windows 2000 on all the way up to Windows Vista. And it supports all the versions, whether it's XP Home, XP Pro, whether you're using Vista Basic or Vista Ultimate, doesn't matter. That same version supports all of that. So it makes it nice so you don't have to have two different versions or whatever going on. If you are a 6.0 user, it is free to upgrade to version 6.1. But if you do plan to install that on Vista, you will need a brand new 6.1 CD to do the install because the 6.0 install didn't know how to handle Vista. And we are charging $5 for that. So that's just basically that includes shipping and everything. So it's basically just to cover the cost of the CD and the shipping and that type of thing. And as for Vista, the install is very similar to as it always was. And I'll start getting into some Vista things. And feel free, we got a kind of a nice-sized group that I can certainly deviate in areas that you think would be most productive for you guys as far as what you want to hear. So if I start going off into the weeds of stuff you could care less about, feel free to let me know. Or if you have questions or concerns or anything like that, feel free to let me know. Yes?
Yeah, I have a question on Vista. I've heard that it does not have menu bars in that. Is that true?
It's up to the application of whether or not you have a menu bar. Some of the new applications typically have menu bars, but they're usually not visually there all the time. Once you tap the Alt key, they'll come up. IE7 is a good example of that. You don't see the menu bar up there, but once you tap the Alt key, then the menu bar comes up. Office 2007, you're right, doesn't have a menu bar anymore. They go off to this thing, but that has nothing to do with Vista. It's really more the applications are kind of trending that way versus the operating system doesn't really have anything to do with that. But we'll show some Vista stuff here because I know it's still new to a lot of people and a lot of concerns about it, where it's going to go. But I'm hoping by when I'm done today, and I was saying this earlier today and I say it a lot, that whether you choose to go to Vista or not, that's up to you. But I don't want your decision of why you don't want to go there because it's not accessible. And I don't think that checkbox is checked. It is accessible. Other checkboxes, you personally, that's up to you of how you want to go with it. But I think Vista is very accessible with WindowEyes 6.1. So Vista in itself, some people ask, you know, should I go to it? Should I go to it? And as I just said, accessibility shouldn't be your concern. But one of the things that Vista touts about is that it's more secure now. Some people might consider that a little bit annoying in some cases because whenever you try to do anything, a lot of times they'll ask you. I don't know if you've seen the commercial from Apple. I love it where they kind of keep saying something and the guy says, are you sure? Are you sure? And you keep going back and forth. And that's kind of what Vista does. But and they kind of tout that as saving the admin from themselves. Under Windows XP, everybody pretty much ran with administrator privileges. That was just kind of the standard way. And so all applications assumed they were running as administrator, and most people were running that way. Well, under Vista, they've really kind of tightened that down a little bit to make sure that applications can't do things that they shouldn't be able to do, even if you are an admin. You can't just easily go off and do things to your system. And certainly if you're not an... Certainly, if you're not an admin, they want to keep you from doing that as well. So some applications may not work out of the box with Vista just because they were written wrong, and they were written assuming that you were an administrator. But Vista has given you some ways around that. I think I'm going to need some water. To basically allow you to run applications as if they were an administrator. So you can flag your application that says, okay, even though I'm under Vista and all this good security stuff, go ahead and launch this application as an administrator so that it still will function. So even if you have an application that was poorly written, thank you, it still has a very good chance of working under Vista by just making that particular setting. So they tried to make sure that things were backward compatible, but sometimes driver issues and things like that still may be a concern. No, you already had your one, so that's good. Mm-hmm. No, what's your question?
So are they, is Vista working on the idea of permission setups like they use in you?
No, it's still based on the same idea that XP had. It's just they're more stringent now on what an administrator can and can't do.
Okay.
So if I go to do something, and I'll show you some of this because Windows will come along for the ride. Hope I get rid of this. But basically, just to make sure before it installs something that might potentially corrupt your system, they're just asking you, are you sure? And if you don't have admin rights, then it pops up a dialogue that says, first of all, are you sure? And if you are, you need to log in right now temporarily as an admin. So an admin could come over your shoulder, type in their username and password, then it would allow the installation or whatever it may be to go on and continue. Mm-hmm. Yes, another question in the back. Oops.
Does Vista still... Oops.
Wait a minute. In the back.
Go ahead, in the back. They had a recording device over there. I'm not sure it's on, but it it's up to you, Louis.
My suspicion is it is going to be up on the website. How it is going to be available, I have no idea, but it will be up on the archives. And you can always get it. I don't think there'll be tapes, but you'll be able to get it from the internet. Oh, they'll make tapes? Yeah, okay.
That doesn't mean can be sleeping right now, though. You've still got to be attentive. Okay. Okay, there's a question in the front, then.
Okay, Mike. Does
Vista still offer a...
I'll repeat it. Yeah, the question was, does Vista still support what it sounds like a command prompt and or 16-bit applications? You can still run 16-bit applications similar as you could under XP. It's kind of a hit and miss, as it was under XP, whether or not they fully functional or they are fully functional. And it still has the command prompt very similar that you would expect under XP.
There are some I'm sorry, Doug. I was a beta tester for Microsoft from the beginning of Vista, and towards the end, there is a shell, a DOS shell you can go to and run some applications. I had some interesting experiences with certain applications. Some of them ran smoothly, other ones were kicked out, and I went back to the desktop. So it's a hit and miss.
So I'm sitting right now. I booted up my computer, which I have set up for a dual boot of Vista and XP, but I booted it into Vista, and I'm just sitting at the login screen right now, and I just wanted to show you. And of course, my machine just went to sleep, but I woke it up. Okay. So I have it sitting here, just and WindowEyes is set to automatically come up at the login screen, and I have it also configured to automatically come up after I log in, so I'll get it at the desktop. But I just wanted to see that it does speak while you're at the login screen. So I just have two accounts. I have my Real Doug account, and I have my test account. Bubba. So everybody can hear that synthesizer in the back, especially? Okay, good. Thanks to Louis' speakers there. So I'm going to go ahead, and there's some other controls in here that you could tab around to, but I'm going to go ahead and go to Doug, and I'll hit enter on that.
Edit box. Doug. Password.
Said password twice because the edit box is named password, and it defaults to password in the password box for some reason. So I'm going to go ahead and type in my secret password. Hit enter to log in.
WindowEyes having trouble going back and forth between XP and Vista.
Well, you would install WindowEyes in both operating systems, right?
Right.
So
you want to keep both of them on the system.
Well, I have a dual boot, so I actually have two partitions, one with Vista, one with XP. I installed WindowEyes on each of those partitions, so when I boot up, I'm in XP. When I boot up in Vista or whatever, it doesn't matter. Okay. It just works automatically. So after I logged in at the desktop, WindowEyes came up automatically, and it actually came up at the WindowEyes tip of the day dialog, which is something new that we added in 6.0, that basically just pops up a dialog that has a tip that just sometimes people forget about certain things. So we just have like one or two sentence types tips that come up and just kind of help you remind you of those things. Some people find those tip of the days extremely annoying. Well, you can certainly check a checkbox that says stop putting these up on the time on launch. But people have kind of liked that. So we've done a lot of things, especially to help some of the beginning users. With our 6.0 release, we've added several things that kind of help the beginning user, and tip of the day is just being one of those. So I'm going to go ahead and escape out of that tip of the day. And
new computer detail.
What I'm going to do is, I'm just sitting at the Windows Vista desktop right now, and just kind of show you how this is similar to XP, but there's also a couple subtle differences that I'll get into in more detail. I'm going to shut one other window that popped up here. So I'm sitting at the desktop. I'm going to go ahead and just bring up the start menu with Control-Escape.
Start search.
So that brought up the start menu, but it also said edit box, start search. And I'm going to spend a lot more time on the start menu here in a little bit, but I just wanted to pop that up so we're starting at the same place. I'm going to hit escape to close that.
Start button.
And now I can just tab off of the start button, as I could under XP.
Quick launch. Show desktop button.
So I'm just at the quick launch now. That may or may not be enabled for you, but I can arrow left and right through the options in the quick launch. That's basically put there so that a sighted user can grab the mouse, go over and click on one of those icons. That application just starts up very quickly from the keyboard. You just have to get into it by tabbing over to it and then arrowing and hitting enter. Tab off again.
Taskbar. WindowEyes.
So it takes me to the standard taskbar. Again, XP has the same thing. And I could arrow left and right through the applications that are currently running on my taskbar and hit enter. It would actually open that application. Tab again.
Notification chevron button.
Notification chevron, it said. That's the close or collapse, open or expand, rather, the sys tray option over there. But I can just arrow them through the options in the sys tray.
But Windows security alerts.
I'm just right arrowing.
97 available plug-in. Charging. Button.
Okay. So it tells me I have 97% of my battery and it's charging at the moment. And I can just arrow left and right through the options in the sys tray. And depending on the option, I could bring up the context menu. I could do a left or right click, whatever the case may be when I'm in that. Tab off again.
Desktop. Recycle bin, 1 of 4, no selected item, list view.
So now I'm sitting at the desktop, again, just like Vista, and I could arrow up and down through these items.
WindowEyes, command prompt, 4 of 4, perform text-based command line functions.
Yeah, those are some tooltips that perform text-based command line functions. That's a tooltip that pops up. WindowEyes can be instructed to ignore tooltips or go ahead and speak them, or you could just tell Vista to stop popping them up. If I tab one more time.
Start. Button.
I'm back to the start button again. So this is very, very similar to what you saw under Windows XP. But there's one thing that if you were sighted and you could see my screen, which is not available right now, it's pointing directly to me. But there's another component on the right side of Vista, which is an optional thing new to Vista, called the Windows sidebar. And what this is the sidebar is similar to the sys tray, only it's more visible, kind of the way I describe it anyway. And you can have what they call gadgets in the sys tray, or in the sidebar. And these gadgets can range anywhere from a clock, like I see a digital, or rather an analog type clock up here now showing me the time. It could have a weather. It could have the latest headline feeds coming through. There's scratch pads, things like that, that are just some visual little teeny gadgets that are sitting over wherever you decide to park the sidebar. And then a sighted user would again go over there and click on them or do whatever you want to it. But it's not in the tab order, so Microsoft did, thankfully, give us some keyboard accessibility to it. I'm not sure how functional it is for somebody who is blind to be able to use it, because it does take some work to focus it, tab to the component you want, and then do whatever you want within that component. Like the clock, for instance, WindowEyes has insert T for time and date.
4:28 p.m. on April 12th.
I mean, how can you speed that up? You know, you hit a keystroke and it gives you the time. Well, let's show the same procedure if I want to get that through the sidebar. First of all, Windows G is the shortcut Microsoft gave us to – I'm sorry, Windows Space is the shortcut to make the sidebar active. So if I do Windows Space
– Sidebar.
And visually what I see is in the sidebar, it has a little plus sign up at the top and the left and right arrow. This highlighted the plus sign. If I hit enter right now, it would open up a dialog that would allow me to add more gadgets to my gallery, kind of maintain or add more gadgets to the sidebar and kind of allow me to maintain some of those as well. Once you focus the sidebar, you can use Windows G to go through the gadgets within the sidebar. So if I do Windows G,
clock.
It just says clock. That's the one component that I have there. That's the only component that I have. And if I want to then get the information from that, I can hit the tab key. And then basically what that does is take me into browse mode.
4:24:41 p.m.
Okay.
Button.
And I'm in our browse mode, which is like if I were surfing the web and I brought in a web page, which if we've got some time, I can show you some of that. But that basically takes any gadgets that's up there, takes the contents of that, and puts it in our browse mode and allows you to edit it. So you can see the steps to get to the clock is kind of time-consuming, so I'm not sure the advantage of a lot of these things. But just to show you how you might want to add your gadget, like let's say the weather gadget, so that you can, again, visually you could always see what the current weather temperature is for whatever area you have defined. I would have to first focus the sidebar again, so I can do my Windows space.
Sidebar.
I can hit enter now.
And
this opens up the gadget gallery, and I can arrow until I get down to weather.
Weather button.
And I can hit enter on the weather button.
Weather.
And that added now weather into my sidebar. Visually, I see that actually popped up. If I want to go verify that, I can do my Windows space.
Sidebar.
Windows G to go forward. Actually, Shift Windows G will go backwards through the gadgets, by the way. So if I do Windows G.
Clock. Weather.
Okay, there's the weather that I just added that I couldn't get to before. Now, if I hit tab on this.
45 Redmond, mostly cloudy, Lake Redmond, mostly cloudy, 45, 57, 42. Link Friday, link Saturday, link Sunday, 59, 48, free.
It goes on and on and on about the weather. This is isn't that nice and arrogant of Microsoft to assume that I want Redmond's temperature? You can change that, by the way. So I can easily change that to whatever I want.
Can you set up that sidebar like for your favorites?
It's strictly for the available gadgets that you have. And Vista gives you several by default, but then there's also third party gadgets. You can't use it like the you can't use it like it's more for gadgets.
So the gadgets, it's like, okay, so what's the biggest difference between the gadgets and taskbar and SysTray?
Well, like the taskbar are applications that are actually running. That's a real application that's running. SysTray are more like utilities type of thing. And the sidebar is basically kind of the SysTray on steroids, because it's basically the same, but I think they make it more visual up there. Because, I couldn't get the weather down there on the SysTray. There's just not enough room to see it. Well, this actually takes some real estate off my desktop, and I can actually see the weather sitting up there. Or I see a full analog clock with the hands in the sidebar itself.
Okay, you could open up Internet Explorer and go to the weather and just put that in dashboard.
Right, but that's an application running, and then you'd have to, you have to go to it or whatever. These are just like utilities that aren't in Alt-Tab list. You're not going to get in the way of when you Alt-Tab around between your applications or just sitting over there. And again, they're more designed, I think, for the sighted world, because they can just glance over there and look. They
exactly.
Don't have to Alt-Tab, hit a keystroke, do a mouse click. They can just look over there and see it.
Several people that I work with have those gadgets active. And one of the most common ones that they have, these two attorneys that I work with, is their stock investment. They have the ticker running, and they're constantly looking at their stock. So, it's a visual thing, but it's a very useful visual thing for them, because they can have that running and do everything else and not have to worry about it getting in the way of their applications.
Yeah. I mean, it's there if you want it. It's accessible if you want it, but it's up to you whether you use it. Any other question in the back?
Yes, more for a simpleton. The person's been using Jaws.
Well, let's just cut to the chase here. Okay.
You can't get me started now, please.
I mean, it is difficult to justify switching. If you've already invested the money into it and it's doing what you want, it is difficult to justify the switch. I think what's important, though, is that there is a choice out there. There's a serious alternative to JAWS, and that's WindowEyes. WindowEyes is less expensive. It works with all the operating systems. I feel it's much more stable. We don't release a product and then have to put out a patch a week later and another patch to fix that patch. And we don't have as many updates as they do, but that's because we don't have to. We make sure that our products are there. They have a board of directors that says, you will ship this upgrade because we need the income, and it goes whether it's ready or not. And we just don't do that. We'll put off the release a week or two or whatever it takes to fix those problems. That would be referred to as a competitive upgrade, and we've kind of toyed with the idea. But what we do have, which is very interesting that I've not seen in the industry, is we do have a lease-to-own program, which allows you to purchase WindowEyes over time. And we came out with a, I don't know if I can talk about that or not, but we came out with a new product that will even keep that price down even more. And hopefully Chris knows what the pricing of all that is. But with our existing strategy that we've had, it's basically $100 upfront, and we give you then a CD that you can install WindowEyes, and it will work for 30 days. Within that 30-day period, before it times out, and when it does time out, it will be a 30-minute demo, just like the standard demo we give away. You can then call us up, and for $50 more, we will give you another 30 days. And you continue to do that until it's paid off. So that just means you get another – you have to call us up. You get another authorization that you then install, and it gives you that another 30 days. So that works that way. And so what we're doing now, because we feel that WindowEyes, especially with our Vista support, there's a lot of JAWS users out there that just don't have the Vista support or the Office 2007 support that WindowEyes offers. And so we are making those people to make this lease to own even more attractive. And Chris, do you have the details of pricing?
Well, basically, you can pay like $39 for the next 60 days, and after then, you can pay like $39 to $40 about 3 years. So we are thinking, we are thinking about that plan at this point.
So we will be announcing some details on that. But as I said, the lease-to-owned program, the way that it is today, is $100 upfront, $50 a month until it's paid off. And I believe that we also require in that you purchase an SMA as part of that, because part of the problem is that if you take that long to pay it off, we want to make sure you're using current versions. And so we require you to use the SMA, so you automatically get those upgrades when they come out during this period that you're paying it off. The SMA is an additional $300.
I'd be interested,
and that gives you three upgrades.
I'd be interested in hearing a comparison of the authorization schemes of WindowEyes and JAWS.
Well, that's pretty easy. They do. We don't. We do not use any sort of other than our lease-to-own program, because that we have to tie it to 30 days. But our standard product, at least in the United States and several other countries, is not copy-protected in any form. That doesn't mean you can just copy and give it away. It does have a unique serial number. That serial number is registered to you. But you can install it on as many machines as you choose to, as long as you are the only user using it. So that is nice that you do not have
and
to deal with
that. And we trust our customer, right?
Right. Yeah. Right, right. I mean, that's the biggest thing, is we do trust our customers that you can do that. When I use software that's copy-protected, I find it extremely annoying. I'm not there to rip off the product. I just want to use it, and I've got several machines that I need it on, and it's very frustrating. Or if it's on a weekend and you lose the authorization, what do? You got to wait till Monday and hope that you can get something quick. And so yes, we just do not deal with any of that. Actually, WindowEyes also has been the first in many technology type breakthrough type of things. For instance, WindowEyes was the first to support PDF documents. A lot of people don't necessarily know that. We were the first to support Flash. We were the first to support remote computing by JAWS by close to a year before they decided to put it in. And when they did, they charge an extra $200 per seat that you use. WindowEyes doesn't charge that. It comes with WindowEyes. So that means if you're using a Citrix environment, if you're using terminal services, or if you're just using remote desktop, which Windows XP Professional has, or I forget where they introduced that in Vista, which versions. There's like five versions of Vista, and I never get them straight. But some of those have remote desktop in them, and WindowEyes supports that as well. So that was certainly first. The Firefox support, which is a serious alternative to Internet Explorer. WindowEyes was the first and still, in my opinion, the best to support Firefox right now. And some of the new dynamic HTML, which they're now calling ARIA, support some of the rich Internet applications that are being developed. WindowEyes is kind of spearheading all that. And the Office 2007 support We still have the best support for that. And of course, Vista. We were there the day that Vista shipped. So we have a lot of these things where we're first. We're not just putting out versions of fluff so that we can get a quick income, you know, from the upgrades and things like that. We make sure that the products are stable. I think we have by far the best tech support group for WindowEyes than any other screen reader that's out there. You call, you actually talk to somebody that knows something. They're not going through a checklist or it's not, you know.
Is there an implicit comparison?
Question about the support. You
brought
that up.
Sure.
When you call it the technical support number, is it an 800 number you call, or do you have to pay an arm and a leg for the long distance?
Well, it depends on the long distance carrier you're using, but if you're using one that costs you an arm and a leg, I can help you get a cheaper one. But no, we do not have an 800 number service. A lot of the industry is getting away from the 800 number type tech support. Yeah. Yeah. Right. No. I mean, they tried it and they backed off, and several other companies tried it. We've never actually offered it just because. Do they still have an 800 support? Sorry. Oh, it goes up and down. Yeah. But I mean, there's so many things nowadays that you get free long distance. I mean, your cell phone may have full long distance, and the cost of it, just we felt that it was better not to have it. And the problem is, you know, we looked at many ways of this, and we feel that aside from the obvious cost of us having to have an 800 number, it's that sometimes because we have great support, because you actually talk to somebody that knows something, even now we get people calling us that have totally unrelated to WindowEyes questions. And I feel if we had an 800 number, we would be so bogged down with these people calling us unrelated questions that, you know, let us support our product. So we feel that that's good. So answer, no, we don't have that.
I think it's remarkable that people expect to call an 800 number to buy a Mercedes. You know?
Maybe you shouldn't have a Mercedes. If you
don't. Have a question about tech support. I have a new Braille sense user. If I want tech support, what information do I have to give you guys to validate
the fact that I own the product? Well, on the Braille sense, it's not a big deal because you either, you know, it's a physical piece of hardware that we know you have. It's not like you can duplicate that on software. So there's absolutely no problem with that. But even with WindowEyes, we don't drill you. We don't, you know, ask for your social security number and everything else. Sometimes we might ask you for your serial number depending on the types of questions that you're asking. But typically we will just answer your questions, no questions asked. Mm-hmm.
Another question.
Who got this guy?
A JAWS user going over to WindowEyes. You get used to the commands that you use in JAWS. How hard is it to switch over to WindowEyes?
Well, I mean, it can be difficult, just like anything. Change is difficult. But there's a couple things that you can do. One, we do offer a JAWS layout that you can map our keystrokes that are very similar to JAWS. The problem is there's a big philosophy difference between JAWS and WindowEyes. They have the JAWS cursor, PC cursor idea, for instance, and they have one hotkey depending on the cursor that's active. So if you want to read the line under the JAWS cursor, you hit the one keystroke. Then if you want to hear under the PC cursor, you switch to the PC cursor and hit the same keystroke. Well, with WindowEyes, we have two separate keystrokes, one to hear the line under the mouse, one to hear the line under the cursor. So we can't map our philosophy into their philosophy that way, just because, you know, we're different. So we do some things to try to help minimize that aspect, but we certainly define the standard keys that you would do. I mean, it's very weird. You do insert J and WindowEyes control panel pops up. I mean, that kind of freaks me out when I do that. I know. But so those types of things, are the recurrent line, things like that, we've mapped to whatever their keystrokes are, read to end, things like that, some of the major keys. But we still prefer if it's really probably just worth going cold turkey, learn the WindowEyes keystrokes. All our documentation, all our support is going to be based on the default keystrokes. So it's best that you actually just kind of bite the bullet, you know, get some good counseling, get some good people around you, hold your hand and learn those keystrokes. We do ship with WindowEyes, you get an installation guide that does have the a hotkey guide to some of the, I think, the more common keystrokes. I believe that comes in large print and in Braille standard.
It is in Braille because I have one, and I was I'm a recovering Windows. I dumped JAWS one day, and 3 days later, I'm doing everything with WindowEyes. I just applied myself, and stubborn as I am, I was able to learn WindowEyes without a problem and do everything without having to use the JAWS mapping configuration. It was there. I could have used it, but I chose to learn WindowEyes with its own set of keystrokes, and
At times I was a little confused, but part of it was because I wasn't paying attention. But it's a doable thing, and believe me, it made a big difference.
What kind of training is available? Does it come on
the
CD?
Right, we have, it comes with a six-hour tutorial that that basically just goes through several different types of things. It's not an in-depth. It's not meant to teach you here's how to use Word, but it just gives you some of the basic ideas of how to navigate the system, some of the basic keystrokes of Window Eyes, and being able to do some of those things. So that's certainly a very good tool that you can use. And then, of course, the entire manual is there as well. If it's not in the manual, it's not in the product, so it's all there. And then we also do have training that we do around the country to where we can actually come to your place if there's, I forget what all the details are. There has to be a minimum of so many people in the group. We do charge for this service, but it is very reasonable that we can actually go around and do that type of thing. So we're trying to set up more of that. We're also looking at making more specialized tutorials like Excel with Window Eyes. So not only does it just show you how to use Window Eyes with Excel, but it also teaches you how to use Excel effectively with Window Eyes. So you can do all the things of that, or Word, or IE, or Outlook, or whatever, all of those things just integrated into that. Yes, another question in the back?
I'm not too sure. I don't know much about it, but does it read MapQuest?
Sure. Yeah. MapQuest is just based on the web, and so most web pages are accessible. And certainly, I'm trying to think if I've actually tried MapQuest with Window Eyes. I don't know that I have, but I just used it to get to this hotel today, I would expect it to work. Right. I mean, it's basically just text that comes up with the driving direction, so I would expect that to read fine.
I use MapQuest all the time, and I use it with Window Eyes effectively. I haven't had a problem with it, and I even generate maps for my sighted friends. So, yeah, it works pretty good. I myself, as a blind user, just get the text directions, but when I need to give to somebody, I just go and generate the full map with directions, and Window Eyes hasn't failed me yet.
Who's generating them? I mean, what application? If it's an Excel chart, absolutely.
Yahoo Finance, they generate those charts saying what the price has been.
The only thing we can do with those is, I mean, that's a graphic to us. It just comes through as a graphic. So we can only read any tag that they might have put on it. We don't analyze a graphic and try to get in that. No, that's just nowhere can we go with that.
But in an Excel spreadsheet.
Excel spreadsheet, absolutely. I think we have the best Office support in general for Word, Outlook, Excel, PowerPoint. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Excel, you can get really deep. I mean, we created a worksheet that actually has every possible chart type that you can create, and that's a lot of them. You have different charts, but then you have variants of those charts. And so we created every possible scenario that we could, and we made sure all those worked. And we also ran them through our competitors, and we found out they got the common ones, but the less common ones, they fell flat on their face. And so we just make sure those details that if we're going to do something, we make sure we do it all the way. We just do that. Yes, another question? In front.
It used to be, in the earlier versions of Windows, there was support for SoundForge, the sound editor, and that has gone away.
It really hasn't gone away. What's sort of happened is the applications themselves have become more and more less accessible as they new versions come out. So there are certainly people that are using them. Is it optimal? No. Those application developers don't seem to be too interested in making their applications accessible. I think we did one of those. Was it I can't even remember which one it was. Now, they actually did do something with MSAA, and we supported that with our 5.5 version or maybe 6.0 version it was 5.5 because it's been out there a while. But I don't know the details of that on top of my head. We are doing some things in future versions that I think will help these applications considerably since they're not willing to do much on their own. But it's just kind of hit and miss. But we do have, these types of questions, since I'm not fluent in these applications myself, is I recommend people off to our GW Info list, which is a list of about 600 Window Eyes users that it's a voluntary list that you can go on to, and it's a wealth of information. So if you have any questions, does this application work and we've never heard of it, chances are somebody out there has tried it or using it or whatever, and you can get some information. So if you have specific questions about music type applications, then I would post it there and find out what people are saying instead of me dancing up here.
Okay. Do you recommend a particular speech program with your Window Eyes?
synthesizer?
Yeah.
Well, WindowEye ships with the DeckTalk voice, which we use by default, and then but we also ship all nine languages of Eloquence. So you can use those if you choose. So if you are a JAWS user, they have Eloquence. And so if you're comfortable with that voice, you can certainly use our Eloquence. But the nice thing of WindowEyes is that it supports a lot of the old legacy hardware synthesizers, as well as any sappy 4 or 5 synthesizer, 3, 4, or 5. Mm-hmm. So, and that's, you know, we supported all the sappy synthesizers for a long time as well, where we just pop up anything that you have installed. We'll just show you the list of whatever you have installed, and you select whatever you want to be able to select.
Isn't it true that the Eloquence that comes with WindowEyes is usable with other things, whereas the one that comes with JAWS isn't?
Correct. Currently, the way that it is, we ship Eloquence sappy versions. So when you install it, it just installs the sappy version. So any other application that is able to talk to sappy synthesizers can utilize that version of Eloquence. Where again, with the JAWS version, they use Eloquence, but they're using the what they call the ETI interface version of that, which is a proprietary interface. It's locked to JAWS, can only be used by JAWS, where we have it open to everything. Okay. Yes, another question?
It's not really a question. I just want to come in. And the way you use the synthesizers, when you're reading text, the commas are the periods are encountered, there's pausing. And that JAWS refuses to do that. I'm not sure. It's been that way with GW Micro, and that's one of the reasons why I use it. So I just want to read.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. The pauses and that type of thing are typically caused just by the commas and periods in the text, and we make sure that the synthesizer sees those, and it's up to the synthesizer of how they handle that. So if you get one synthesizer and it's not necessarily pausing as much, you know, that would be a direct function of the synthesizer itself. So we just make sure it has the data it needs to be able to put in the natural pauses and things that you would expect as it's reading text. But thank you. Okay. Whoops. Yes.
When there are capitals or bold, does it have a different inflection?
Yeah, there's several things that you can do with that. As you're typing, of course, well, I can bring up like a run dialog. So if I'm typing, I can... So that was an upper and lower case. So you can indicate that. And that's what we do by default as you're typing. We also have an option that says it can say cap. So it'll say cap T, cap T, cap T, you know, whatever, which is annoying. Some people ask us for that, but that's right. And then as you're reading back text, like if I read this current line, you know, you didn't hear the difference. And that's because by default we don't indicate, or you'd probably go crazy if you're reading through text and did that. But we do have a capitalization alert that will let you know when words are changed, or if the first letter is capitalized, if it's all capitalized, or if it's mixed capitalization, you can get a different indication for all of that. And we can either do that through tones, or we can again use the word cap. So if it said like cap Doug, that would mean the D is capitalized. If it said cap cap Doug, that means all of it's capitalized. If it said cap 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 Doug, then that means it's mixed, and it's up to you to figure out what that is. Or if it's tones, it would say something like Doug, 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 for the no capitalized first letter, all upper mixed. It would give you all
about
that tons.
The document I got last week that said that the new things are in red.
Well, but you could turn on our attribute changes, and it would, as it's reading along, it would say red on whatever and read you that text, and then say black on whatever and use those. And it will use colors. And the nice thing, too, is when we put in our color dictionary, we did this some time ago, is that, and to my knowledge, we're still the only ones to do this, is that if you come across a color, because there's really, what, 65 million some odd colors or something like that you can do, because it's RGB values, which... combinations are huge. So we obviously can't label all 65 million colors. So you don't want to say shade of red, shade of red, shade light red, light red, light red. So what we do is if it's in our dictionary, we have all the major colors in our dictionary. There's like 50 or some of those in there. What we'll do is we'll say shade of red on something. So if we'll give you the closest color that it matches and tell you it's a shade of that color, which makes more sense than reverting back to RGB numbers or some crazy name or something. I saw another hand. Yes?
I'm wondering, in Excel, can we go back to that for a minute? Can, if you said it reads the charts and the graphs and stuff, how, number one, can you go back and edit this, and how will it read it?
Well, any information that it has. I mean, anything that you are able to provide to Excel, we can provide that information to you. So I don't know how familiar you are with Excel, but it can get pretty in-depth as far as the amount of information that you can supply for a chart. But all of that information is accessible. There's a couple ways that you can do it. You can either bring up the properties of the chart and use Excel to kind of give you some of the basic information, like what are the headers of this particular series or what's the series names and things like that, if you choose. But more often what you'd want to do is focus the chart. And Excel itself doesn't give you the ability of focusing a chart from the keyboard. A sighted user would just take the mouse and they would click on the chart to focus it. So what we did was, and we have a keystroke insert tab that we use for many applications. We call it our page navigation hotkey. And if I'm in, like for instance, if I'm in a web page and I do insert tab, it will give me a dialog will pop up that will give me a list of all the links on the web page. And there'll be a radio button that says, okay, switch to all the tables or switch to all the lists or switch to all the anchors. And there's like 10 different things that you can switch to. And then our list changes to whatever you select. It defaults to links. Well, in Excel, the same insert tab also works, and it allows you to show, one of the options is show me all the charts. And so when you click on that radio button, it will show you all the charts, and you can make that specific to the worksheet you're on or specific to the entire workbook that's open. And then once you find the chart you want, you can hit enter, and boom, that will focus the chart as if the user went there and clicked on it. And once the chart is focused, Excel did give you some keystrokes that you can actually arrow through the different components of the chart. So once the chart is focused, you can use up and down arrow keys or left and right arrow keys. Up and down take you, I believe it was up and down take you by different groupings of the chart, and then left and right take you to elements of that group. See that the reversed, I always forget that. But so that does give you some of that. But even if that doesn't float your boat, when the chart has focus, if you do our insert E, which is our element properties, and again, if I were in a web page and I were on a link and I did insert E, it would give me information relative to that link. I can be on a chart that has focus, do insert E, and it will give you all the, if, depending on what component of the chart is focused, but if you've just focused it through our dialogue, the main chart has focus, it will give you all the information, everything that is available for that particular chart in an edit box. It's a read-only edit box that you can then arrow up and down through, and it will give it all to you that way. So then you have a cursor, you can go letter by letter, in line by line, whatever, and read through all of the different things that are in that chart. If you're just interested in a particular series of that chart, then you can focus the chart, arrow to the series you're interested in, and then do insert E, and our dialog will then only show you information about that series of information. So it'll give you each you know, data point name that it might have, the data point data, all of that type of thing in there as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Should I go on? Forget where I left off, so I'll go ahead. But I mean, if you'd rather start seeing more of WindowEyes and less of Vista, I can certainly do that. Or if you'd rather see more of Office, some of those types of components, how do you want me to go? Are you interested more in Vista? You guys sleeping? Both? Okay.
I think that Vista is something because there are companies now that are starting to make a move to Vista. And I think that the users should be aware of that there's no excuse for not having the ability to move with everybody else. If the employer goes to it, you have the resource to support and move forward with them.
Right. Pretty soon you won't have a choice. Vista will just be there. So, was there one more question in the back? Yes.
Slide as it changes.
You're talking about inside Word, IE, both? Right, but I mean, what application are you interested in doing that inside Microsoft Word, for instance? You want to know what all your font types are? Right, we still have an option, attribute changes, that when you turn that on, I was talking about the color before, that also, and actually you can control what it talks about. You can control whether or not you want the font name, whether or not you want the color, whether or not you want the size, or the attributes, like italic, bold, double underline. Well, it would tell you. It would just stop and say Times New Roman 12-point normal red on black, blah. And anytime anything changed, and again, you can control what you want to hear when it changes.
There's a mode you can do it if you don't know what the attributes are in the document.
Right.
You just got a document, and it's got a bunch of attributes in it, and you're not aware.
Right. Actually, inside Word, we give you extensive support over what you want to hear. Right. But the character attributes is just one of them that you can turn this on, and it will read that for you. But if you want to know that there's a header or a field or a misspelled word or track changes, all of these things that you can do inside a Word document, everything that you can do inside a Word document, we can expose somehow through WindowEyes. So let me do some more. I'll just finish up a couple key things that I think is important with Vista, and then we can maybe look at Office 2007 with the ribbon support, because that's also something that eventually people are going to have to deal with. And then we can, if we want, we can go inside some of the actual Office applications. We've done some cool things with the calendar inside Outlook, for instance. I think the Outlook calendar has been very problematic with any screen reader in the past, regardless of what they claim. It just is very problematic. Where with our new support that we have, it's just beautiful. I've just not seen anything that comes close to what we have support for that, as well as any Excel or Word or PowerPoint type support if you're interested in that. So there's a couple things inside Vista that I would like to talk about. One of them is I brushed real quick by the Start menu. The Start menu under Vista is actually pretty cool in some functionality that they've added. At first I was turned off by it, and I wondered, how do you turn this off? But you know, I'm kind of like that. I don't like change either. But once I got used to it, I preferred it, and now I miss it under XP. But if I bring up the Start menu, let me just bring that up.
Start menu, edit box, start search.
So remember, it puts us in this edit box by default called Start Search, and allows me to start typing in anything, and whatever I want will then populate my Start menu with anything that matches that. For instance, if I hit W right now.
W, Microsoft Office Word 2007.
If I hit Enter, it will launch Word. So all I had to do is bring up the Start menu, W, Enter, and boom, Word is launched. That's much faster than the XP days of Control Escape, P for Programs, M to get by all the Microsoft groups until you hear Microsoft Office. Then you hit Enter, and then you down arrow to get, well, then you have to M again to get to Microsoft Word, and then you hit Enter and you launch it. So that's a lot of work there. So this does speed that up considerably. And there are certain things like when I started with Vista, I wanted to do a remote session, but I couldn't under XP. It was under accessories, communication, you could find remote desktop connection. Well, I couldn't find that in Vista. I still can't find it in Vista. But at the Start menu, I can just type REM. Yeah.
Remote desktop connection.
And there it is. I can just hit Enter, and boom, it launches. So that, I think, is very cool. So what it did when I typed REM, actually, visually what happened is there's a list box, rather a list view, on the left side of the Start menu, and it highlighted the first option that's up there. So I still have a blinking cursor in my edit box, but visually it highlighted remote desktop connection up in the top. And notice it said remote desktop connections programs group, because there's a grouping in the Start menu as well of the different items that it found. It found two elements in programs, it found two under files, and it found several under communications. It can also search email. It can search your instant messages. So you have to be a little bit careful when you're doing this. You might pop up an instant message you don't want people to see. So now that, again, focus is in my edit box still, so I can continue to type or backspace or whatever, but I can also use the up and down arrow keys to go through the other options. So although remote desktop connection was my first choice, if I hit down arrow,
Windows Remote Assistance.
Windows Remote Assistance. So if I hit Enter, it will launch that.
And
that's a tooltip that popped up. So the next one down, if I down arrow again.
Aaron, 2,654,452,362. File group.
So that's under the files group, and that actually is probably an IM instant messaging history of some messages that I had with Aaron in there, and evidently we talked about REM in there somewhere. I don't know. So it actually is very nice in how this works. But so the Start menu, just to give you a quick gist of how all the rest of it works, if I tab away from the edit box.
Start 1. 13. List view.
Visually up here, I see two groupings up on the Start menu. The left side is the list view that we were looking at with all the programs that are up there. And when I first bring up the Start menu, it has some of the basic applications. Kind of remembers the last applications that I ran up there, so it allows me to get to them quickly. That's on the left list view. On the right list view, you always find the name of the user, which in my case is Doug. You'll see documents and pictures and music and games, search, computer, network, connect to, control panel, all those things are on the right. And so you can just tab around these. I'm going to tab again.
Sleep button keeps your session in memory and puts the computer in the low power state so that you can quickly resume working.
Okay. So I just tab down to the sleep button, and now I could arrow off to other things, or I can tab here.
Remote desktop connection.
And I'm back to the
program thing. CL results. 1 of 2. Edit box. Start search.
So I'm just tabbing around those. So we wanted to look to see what you call these different list views up there. So we looked on Microsoft sites and did some searching to find out exactly what they call these different list views up there. And I wish we had the power of Microsoft to come up with these wonderful names that they had, because they came up with a great name. They have the left side and the right side. So all the marketing power of Microsoft, and they call it the left side and the right side. I'm just starting.
Very scientific.
So anyway, and certain, let me bring down the start menu again and pop it back up. If I were to up arrow one time, it goes to all programs. And when I hit enter on all programs,
Adobe Reader 8, 1 of 24. F2, preview.
So it puts us more like in a tree view now versus all programs before, again, was a pull-down menu that you would go down and then you'd open up more pull-down menus. Now it's more like a tree view that I can up and down arrow through this. So if I wanted to go to the Windows, I could hit W.
Windows calendar. Oh, W.
There's a bunch of W now. So instead of Microsoft, now they use W for Windows.
W, Window Eyes, closed, 24.
So Window Eyes closed, so it tells me it's closed. I could hit the right arrow key to open it and that type of thing, and basically treat it like a tree view. So that's one thing that's different with Vista. So in the end, I think the Vista start menu does have some advantages. That edit box, I think, is a great time saver. Very quickly allows you to get to applications that you just want to be able to run, get to. Just like the sidebar, for instance. If I wanted that, I could do this ID.
Window sidebar.
Boom. Hit enter and the sidebar would actually launch if it wasn't there. Anything you want pretty much is right there that you can just boom and get right to it. So then they some of the other things that they modified too is like the Windows Explorer, they've modified a little bit. They have the standard list view that was there before, but now you can actually get to the headers. So you can actually tell it to easily sort alphabetically, going ascending or descending, things like that, where before it was a little bit difficult to do that. Those headings are now there. One of the things that I think is also nice, let me go into the control panel. I'm in the start menu search, I'll just type CONN.
Control panel.
I can hit enter for control panel.
I had hardware.
What they've done here for, if you want to go to
programs and features, 32.
If you want to remove an application under Windows XP, it was always annoying. You would go to the add and remove programs, and it would pop up this list, which visually looked like a list view, but it didn't really have any keyboard support except for up and down arrow. So if you were down at the bottom, you couldn't even do page down, you couldn't do end, you couldn't do anything except down arrow and just hold it down until you get there, listen to where you are. If you're not in the W's for window eyes, you'd keep down arrowing some more and you'd eventually get there. Well, now they finally put it in a true list view.
Flash Player 9 ActiveX, publisher, Adobe Systems, installed on 112.20.07. 1 of 9. No selected.
So it tells me I'm on 1 of 9. I can hit W, for instance.
Window Eyes 6.1, publisher, GW Micro.
Okay, but I don't know why anybody would ever want to uninstall Window Eyes, so I don't know why I even show this, but it is much easier now. So that's a positive thing that they did. They've also worked a little bit more on making sure applications are using MSA the way that they
Window
should be.
Eyes.
Let me get to my
desktop.
Okay. Like Solitaire, for instance, if you like to play Solitaire. In the past, what we would do is we'd create a set file environment where we would label all of the graphics. So we'd have to find an ace of spades, and we'd label it ace of spades. We'd find the, you know, two of spades, and we'd label it and all this business. Well, you change your screen resolution, you do other all different color resolutions, things like that would break our graphic dictionary. You go to high contrast black, it would break it. It was just very problematic. It didn't have full keyboard support. Now,
start menu.
I bring up start menu type. Whoops.
Solitaire.
I just typed SOL, hit enter.
Solitaire.
See how quick it is to launch Solitaire
right
now?
Face.
Vista's worth it just for that. So now if I tab around between
face
these options,
button.
It tells me I'm on a face down button.
Suit stack 1 empty. Button.
Suit stack 1 empty.
Stack 1 number 1, 2 of hearts. Button.
So I can just right arrow now through my stacks.
Stack 2 number 2, 4 of hearts. Button.
So, like, there's a 4 of hearts I'm sitting on. If I hit enter, it selects that, and now I can hit right arrow until
stack
I get to 5 of clubs.
Stack 5, number 5, 5 of clubs.
Hit enter.
Stack 5, number
dropped
6, 4 of hearts. Button.
So I can then up, I'm on the 4 of hearts now. If I hit the up arrow key, I'll be on the...
Stack 5, number 5, 5 of clubs.
5 of clubs. You know, so I can hit enter on that and drag that whole stack around. But basically, it's all keyboard accessible now. It's all automatic. There's no window eyes configuration for this. It just works because it's using MSA. Okay. So yeah, so they're getting on that. Now the downside is they also released a new thing with Vista called Windows Calendar, which is kind of a bare bones version. It's kind of like the Notepad to Word, while Windows Calendar is to Outlook's calendar. But unfortunately, they did not make that accessible. And so I yelled at them, and hopefully they will make that better. So some things they made good strides on, other things they didn't do so good on. But those that they did, WindowEyes is certainly there to make all that stuff work. But other than these basic things, Vista is very similar to XP. When you run an application, you don't even care what operating system you're on, basically, at that point. Yes?
I'm just very interested in the editing capabilities. He doesn't have Vista. I just got a new laptop with Vista on it. And one of the things that just frustrated me, I was so used to edit, undo, and I couldn't find anywhere to undo what you've done except the little arrows, at the top, there are arrows to go back. Is there another way to edit?
Again, that's application specific. So, what application? In Word? Yeah. Undo is just Control Z. But you're talking about Word 2007?
It's the 2007.
So you got Vista with Office 2007. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's. I can go in there and start showing the ribbon now. We can actually do that. So I'm gonna just bring up the Start menu. Type Word.
Microsoft Office Word 2007.
Hit Enter.
Microsoft Word.
So, for instance, if I just type this as a test, and I back over test and I delete it. So it's now gone. I can just do Control Z,
undo,
and it's back.
That's the same. It's always been.
Yeah, that
Control Z.
I've never used the Control.
Oh, you've always used the menu.
Yeah.
Yeah, Control Z is much quicker.
Now they have the ribbon instead of the ribbon.
I'm sure that they do.
Edit pull down in the menu bar.
Well, this is Office 2007 doesn't have that anymore.
So it has the ribbons instead.
Right, it's got the ribbon, and we'll look at. Well, as I go through the ribbon, we'll look at that because I'm looking at the clipboard group, and I'm wondering if one of those may be undo. I don't know. I see a cut. I see a paste. One of those is probably undo. So we'll see if I see it there. So one of the things as we're looking for this undo is what the whole idea of what they did with this ribbon, and we worked with Microsoft, the Office group specifically, way back on the very early versions, they call it the dog food versions of Office, that we would get where they're working on this ribbon, and it's actually been nice because they wanted to make sure that this was accessible, the ribbon, to be fully keyboard accessible, fully accessible to a screen reader using MSA and that type of thing. And so we went round and round. We found problems. They fixed it. We had a very close relationship with them. So basically the ribbon is the way that it is because of our working with Microsoft all along the way. Whenever Microsoft would show Office 2007, they would show it with WindowEyes exclusively. When they would show Vista, they would show it with WindowEyes exclusively, and mainly because WindowEyes was the only thing that supported Vista. But again, we just worked with both of those teams very, very closely and have a great relationship with them. But one of the reasons they went with the ribbon, and I'll describe what that is in a second, is that people were calling Microsoft asking for this function, that function, and Microsoft say it's already there. And people just didn't know where it was. Office became so bloated with all of its features and functionalities that they came up with these task panes and dialogues and the toolbar thingy boppers, and it was just a pain to be able to get anywhere that you wanted because they'd come up with a feature and they'd just throw it wherever. So they tried to categorize all of this stuff and now put it up in the ribbon so that it's easy to find all the functionality you want because it's all in one place. And so what they did was they took what they call it a ribbon because it is a horizontal strip across the top of your document area. So it's right below where the menu bar would be typically. You see this ribbon area. And the ribbon is broken up into different groups by name. And within those groups, you have different components that are relative to that group. But what particular ribbon you're seeing is dependent on what I call more like a tab control across the top, where you can, like if I hit the Alt key right now, for instance, normally you go in the File menu. Well, now you go
Home, Alt H, 1 of 7, Tab Control, 0.
So I'm on the Home Tab Control, 1 of 7, and whatever Tab Control I have active is the elements I see in the ribbon. So I'm on the Home tab, so I see all the elements related to Home. If I hit the right arrow key,
Insert, Alt N, 2 of 7.
I went to the Insert menu. Everything relative to Insert is now showing on the ribbon, and I'll show you how you actually get to that. But I can just left and right arrow key through this, or once I know the shortcuts.
Home, 1 of 7.
Let's stay on Home because that's where the clipboard functionality is, and we'll show how this works. If I tab off of this menu bar, or tab control, then it takes me into the ribbon components for this tab control. So let me tab and see what we hear.
Clipboard group. Hey, Control V. Split button. Disabled.
So it said clipboard group. That's the name of the group. And visually, I see the word clipboard, and I see these groups kind of bordered off into different sections. And it said I was on the paste control and whatever control type that was. So I can just continue to tab, and I'll go through all the elements. When I tab into a new group, WindowEyes will tell you the new group you went into. And I'll, of course, always read you the control. One other thing that – oh, so let me hit tab again.
Cut. Alt H X. Control X.
So notice that shortcut. Alt H X. That's the shortcut for cut. All these shortcuts, of course, is a verbosity option with WindowEyes. If you don't like hearing the shortcuts, you can turn us off and we won't speak those to you. Let's tab again.
Copy. Alt H C. Control C. Button.
Okay, let me tab again, and I got a feeling this might be your undo. I hope.
Format Painter. Alt H F P.
It's Format
Control
Painter.
C. Button.
That's interesting. I don't see one. Well, let's tab again.
Office Clipboard. Alt H F O. Button.
So
Program
the
dialog.
Okay, so the last option was this pull down. I wonder if I hit enter on that.
Clipboard empty. Copy or cut to collect items.
No, this just opened up their legacy task pane for the clipboard. So you'd have to find it, but I'm sure it's got to be there. I cannot believe they wouldn't put it up there. But Control Z is still I just never use the menu stuff. I always use Control Z for that. But let me go back up to the menu bar.
Alt H, 107.
Tab
control.
Let me tab this painter thing.
Format painter.
Format
Alt
painter.
H, F,
I'm not exactly sure what that is.
Button.
What a sighted user would do on the ribbon is they would, of course, they're going to click on all these with the mouse. And this is the only time I'm going to use the mouse, or if I do, I'll let you know. But I'm going to take the physical mouse and I'm going to put it on top of that control.
Graphic.
It popped up visually what Microsoft calls a super tooltip, which is basically a tooltip, which is normally a one-liner or two lines at most. This comes up with a couple paragraphs of text describing what this does. And here I see, Format Painter. It copy formatting from one place and apply it another. It gives me more information, kind of a context-sensitive help. Well, we can't require a blind user to grab the physical mouse and put it up there and see the tooltip. So what we did was, through MSAA, is we mapped in the super tooltip into our speak summary. So whenever you're on any one of these controls in the ribbon, you can do our Control Shift S, which is our speak summary. And let's hear what we say.
Clipboard group.
We see.
Format Painter. Alt H F P. Control Shift C. Copy formatting from one place and apply it to another. Double click this button to apply the same formatting to multiple places in the document. Press F1 for more help.
Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so it gives us that same text that a sighted user has by going up that. So you can get that help on any one of these options as you tab through these and go through those. So if I continue to tab, I'm going to go off
Office
to...
Office Clipboard.
Oops, Office Clipboard. One more tab.
Rich Edit. Font. Kill Everybody. Rich Edit. Font size.
Sounds like Kill Everybody, but it's Kill Everybody. That's not good. That's Microsoft's new font. Okay.
Font group. Grow font. Alt H F G. Shrink font. Alt H.
So let me keep going. I'm going to go into it.
Font. Paragraph group. Bullets. Split button.
So you can see I went to a new group called Paragraphs, and there's a lot of controls on this all under the Home tab. And you could tab 5,000 times and go through these, but if you know the group obviously if you know the shortcuts, that's the quickest way to do it. But if you know the group, you can also use Shift left and right arrow key to go from group to group. So if I do a Shift right arrow,
Style group.
Shift right arrow again.
Editing group. Fine.
It takes me to the first component of the next group, or Shift left arrow would take me to the first component of the previous group. So once I get to the group I want, then I can hit Tab and I can get to the element I want. And again, once you learn the shortcuts, that's still a better way to do it. So that's kind of how you navigate this. Now, they also added a new control under the ribbon called the what they call gallery controls. And gallery controls is kind of like what used to look like a pull-down menu, only it's got multiple lists in it. It could have menu items or several different types of lists. And a good example of that is, let me go back up to the...
Page 101.
Yeah, yeah. Let me go back up here. I'm going to go to the Insert tab. There's a good example down here.
Lift up shapes. Alt-M-S-H.
Under the Insert tab, I went to the Illustrations group, and I'm on the Shapes control. And if I bring up this one...
Recently used shapes group. Text box. 1 of 18. List box. Zero.
This pulled down what looks like a pull-down menu, but it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different lists in it. And I'm right now on the first element of the recently used shapes group, which is why it said recently used shaped group.
That's at 18.
And 1 of 18. So there are 18 items in this particular group. And I could tab through those. If I hit tab.
Line. 2 of 18.
Line. I go again.
Zero. 3 of 18.
So I can keep tabbing. billion times to get to the next list. Unfortunately, like when you're in the ribbon, you can use shift and left and right to go from group to group. Unfortunately, in gallery controls, they didn't give us a keystroke to do this. I'm hounding them to give us something that we can go from group to group. So now what you could do is use the down arrow, but again, depending on the number of items in the list, this will skip some, but you still may not go to the next list. So let me down arrow.
Curve. 15 of 18.
Okay. We jumped, but we're still not there. Let me go down again.
Line group. Double arrow. 3 of 12. List box.
So the problem with down arrow is now I went straight down, so I'm on 3 now of whatever it said that is. But I'm in the lines group now. And if I down arrow again.
Basic shapes group. Parallelogram. 3 of 33. List box.
Okay. So I can just go to the group that I want and then tab to the particular shape type that I want, hit enter, and it would, of course, insert that in my text. But that's basically how you do that. Now, eventually, you'd get down to where there would be a...
Gray, new drawing canvas, Alt N, SHN, menu item.
It brought me down to a menu item. So underneath all of these lists, there was actually a menu item. This one only has one. There could be, you know, it just depends. But these gallery controls, they kind of compacted several lists and menu items into one pull-down-looking type of control. And WindowEyes just speaks all of that. And, of course, Braille comes along with all of this stuff as well. So if you have a Braille display on anything that we've been talking about, you get that information in Braille as well. What should you do with that? Any questions on the ribbon? Yes, question. I'm sorry? If, what was that? I'm sorry? If you don't have a Braille display, could you also get it on paper? You mean on your Braille printer, embosser? Well, WindowEyes is not like a grade 2 Braille translator type of device. That's like a Duxbury type product. So if I were in a Word document, I can't WindowEyes. It's not the job of WindowEyes to produce that in Braille print. You would need a Braille translator like a Duxbury or something like that. Yes, we just drive Braille displays, which, you know, those really are designed for a screen reader or some device like a screen reader to do that.
I have a question.
Yes.
You're in Word there, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you pressed the Alt once and it brought up the home group.
Mm-hmm. Or whatever group was last selected, yes.
Okay. Oh, okay. Now, where would be things like File, you know, save, all
Yeah. Good question. Well, that's about the only menu type that they've kept is the File menu. So there's a couple ways I can do that. I can hit Alt, and I hit Alt.
Insert. Alt N.
Because Insert was the last one I was in. That's where it took me.
Arrow.
Now I could just arrow left. Arrow left again.
Office button. Alt F.
They call it the Office button. They call it the Office button now. So that's one way to get to it, which is pretty. Now, what did that say the shortcut was?
Office button. Alt F.
Alt F. So again, I could be. I escaped back into my document. Now, if I hit Alt F.
F. New. Alt F N. Menu item. Arrow.
That's really the only menu item that's still there, and it doesn't look the same as it did before. One thing that, you know, you were trying to find the undo, and I know it's got to be there. I don't know where it is, but I was just trying to find help about. I was asking somebody. What version of that they had installed, or when I was working with Microsoft, they actually asked me that, and I could not find help about. There's no help menu anymore, and there's no about. And so, actually, what you do is you go into the File menu, and then you can tab down to
2004 in this document Word options.
Word options. Hit Enter.
Document one Microsoft.
And then you can down arrow to Resources.
Resources.
And then you can tab down to About, and hit Enter, and that's where help about is. So they've kind of hidden around. So things have moved around a little bit in there, but it basically is all there. You just have to kind of learn the interface. But it is keyboard accessible, and you can get there with WindowEyes as you're digging around through all this stuff.
Document one Microsoft Word.
Yes, John?
John, you can after presentation, I can make a special time for you to show the voice-only note taker. Okay?
Yeah. Nope, they've given this all to me just for WindowEyes. So, sorry. So inside, let's see, I'm trying to think of the best thing. One of the things I'm trying to show off what really makes us stand out from some of the other guys. Within Word, within Office itself, I think we do have the best Office support that's out there today. And part of that is because when you're writing a screen reader, there's several ways that you can get to the information. What we've done with Office is we've decided to talk directly to the Office components. If we're in Word, we're talking directly to Word to get all the information, including the text in the document. To my knowledge, we're the only screen reader that goes directly to Word to get the text itself. The other screen readers might use Word to get the attributes of the text, but not the text itself. And the advantage, you might say, what's the difference? Well, the advantage of that is that we're always 100% accurate. When screen readers, they're called screen readers for a reason, because they typically pull the information from the screen, they're not always 100% accurate, which is why every screen reader gives you a screen redraw, like WindowEyes' insert backslash. It causes all applications to refresh themselves on the screen, causes them all to regenerate the text, and the screen reader can then get back in sync with what really is on the screen. Sometimes you read a line, and you know that's not right. Visually, it's not right, but the screen reader is telling you, yes, it is right, and you know better. And that's because your screen reader is just a little out of sync. Because it's very complicated to keep an off-screen representation 100% 100% of the time.
I was going to ask you if that was an issue with the off-screen model.
It's just a functionality that within Windows it's very complicated. There's about 10 billion ways that you can put information on the screen, and there are application developers out there that seem like they're trying their best to do the most obscure ways of putting information up there. And so there may be techniques or some things that can confuse depending on how the off-screen model is written.
You have to catch it before it gets turned into pixels.
Right, right. But even that, it's difficult because, for instance, let's say you have a W up on the screen, and you have a window that pops up over half of the W. Yep. Well, when that window goes away, only half of the W gets written. Yep. So what is that? Half a W? Is it really attached to the thing that was to the left of it? And so it's very difficult. And we'll be tweaking this forever, and I don't think there ever will be a screen reader that has a 100% off-screen model accurate all the time. It's just impossible. So we're using different techniques, and part of that technique is MSAA, which was Microsoft's attempt early on to help applications be able to talk to screen readers and other AT-type products. But even it is very limited. So now Microsoft is coming out with something called UI Automation, which is the next generation of MSAA, sort of, which again will allow us to get to information without being reliant on the off-screen model. So the more we can do that, the better. And certainly in Office's case, when we're talking directly to Office applications, we can get this and be 100% accurate. If Word doesn't know it, well, then you're in trouble. So Word knows what's going on, obviously, and so by querying it and getting that. And a good example of that is, for instance, with JAWS, if you have two pages, and I'm not picking up, well, yes, I am, but JAWS is a very good product. I don't mean to belittle it at all, but I'm just showing the advantages of WindowEyes in this case. If you've got two pages visible up on the screen at one time, and Windows Word lets you do that. You can show two pages up at once. And you say, read the line. Well, they're using their off-screen model. So what do? They go off and read the line right across both pages, which is very annoying. Now, they do get columns correct because they did some things to compensate for that. But they didn't, at least last I checked, compensate for the dual pages that are up there. Or if I had a page up and it had a comment off in the right margin and you said read a line, it would read the line and then read whatever line happened to coincide with the comment that was sitting off in the right margin. Things like that are because they're using the off-screen model, where we're talking directly to Word, we know where the text is, we know the bounds of the text, and we can read that. Right. So we can be accurate. So we do that whether you're in Excel, whether you're in PowerPoint, whether you're in a Word, or even in the calendar of Outlook, we just get that. So we're always accurate. So it just works very, very nicely. One of the things I guess I would like to show that I think, again, makes us stand out is the calendar of Outlook. Hopefully that's of interest to some people, but that has been so problematic in the past. And so we don't care whether you're using Outlook. All of our Word support, or rather Office support, is supported under Office 2000 and up to 2007. So I'm just going to bring up Outlook.
Start menu. Okay. Microsoft Office Outlook. Inbox Micro.
Certainly in the calendar, we have the basic support that you would expect. But let me just start up a new message, for instance. I always have to watch my email because I just have a dummy account that gets tons of spam, and sometimes that can be embarrassing too. But I quickly opened up a new message, so I didn't have to go through too much of my inbox. And because I don't use Outlook myself. But if I tab between
rich
these different
edit. Onan. CC, rich edit. Subject you.
Well, let me actually put something in here.
Edit. Two.
Let me quickly close my
grant left.
Reminders
there.
So the two I'm going to say to me, subject, this is a test. And hello,
Doug.
What we did with our latest 6.0 release back in December is we added more support from the keyboard to quickly get to components within Outlook. So if you've got an email address, whether you just composed it or whether you're reading a message that was just sent to you, you can use Alt-1 through Alt-8 to read the different headers. For instance, Alt-1
not found.
Will always read the from field. Well, when I'm composing this message, there is no from field, so it said not found. If I were reading a message, it would have said from blah. Alt-2.
Date not found.
Always reads the date. Well, again, I'm the composer now, and there is no date. If I were reading, there would be one. Alt-3.
2.gwmicro.com.
It always reads the 2 field. Now, JAWS has a specific hotkey to read the attachments, but then they have a hotkey to read the first header, hotkey to read the second header. Well, if there's a BCC, then it throws off what the header numbers are. So you can't always consistently say Alt-3 will always read the 2 field, for instance. I don't know what it is. Where with Window Eyes, they always will read it. And if it's not there, it will tell you it's not there. So it makes it a little bit nicer. Alt-4. Read CC, Alt 5.
Read CC not found.
No BCC. Alt 6.
Subject you. This is a test.
Alt 7.
Attachments not found.
And Alt 8.
Status line not found.
So those will always read that. And the nice thing is if you hit those keys twice in a row, it will put focus there. So whether I'm creating it or whether I'm reading it, if I want to go to subject real quick, for instance.
Whoops. Subject you.
Alt 6 is subject. And if I hit it again.
Rich edit. Subject you. This is a test.
It actually puts focus there. I now have my cursor and I can deal with that. So that's really nice. If you've got attachments, you can just do the Alt 7 quick twice to put focus in the attachments and be able to read those. So those keystrokes really help a lot to be able to navigate through your emails.
Dialogue.
I'm going to escape out of that. I'm going to go to the calendar with Control 2, I think, is the Outlook calendar. In Outlook, by default, I now have two calendars open. I have these are both dummy accounts, but I have my personal calendar, which again is dummy, and then I have some calendar with just a bunch of bogus information in it. Now, let me just arrow around and show you our impressive Outlook support here. So if I arrow right, nothing. Arrow right again, nothing. Down arrow. This is Outlook interface. See how accessible that is? I'm arrowing around. I see where I'm going. I see the date. I see if there's appointments. What's wrong with that? Works beautiful.
Doug.
Well, yes.
Are you guys going to do something about supporting Thunderbird?
Well, Thunderbird
is an alternative to the wonderful world of Outlook.
Well, Thunderbird is more email, isn't it? Does it have more than email? Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about the calendar. But for email, it's really a functionality of whether or not they want to put accessibility into it. And they are actually starting to do that now. So we will start seeing better things coming from Thunderbird.
Good.
But a lot of, in work environments, you need access to calendars because you've got to coexist with your coworkers and things like that. So you've got to be able to deal with that. So as I was arrowing around, you were hearing nothing. And basically the point of that is that Microsoft really screwed up with Outlook's support from the keyboard with accessibility. It just doesn't have it. Whether we're using MSA, nothing. Whether we're using the talking directly to Outlook, it doesn't have what we need to do that. There's just no way to really do it. So what some of the others have tried, JAWS have tried to write some complicated scripts to guess where things are going on and things like that, but it's way too easy to break it. And I was playing with it before we did our Outlook support to see, and it was not telling me that there were appointments when there were. It was telling me there were appointments when there weren't. It was telling me I was on a different day than I really was on. It was just too problematic. And if you start changing the view, then it really broke it. So it was just, it was a joke. And I thought, well, why should we try to hack something that is just terribly broken? So what we decided to do is we wrote our own interface to Outlook. The only thing that you need to do is have Outlook running. If Outlook is running, and I have it running, I'm going to minimize it to the taskbar. I can be anywhere I want to at this point, and I can do Insert C. So whether I'm inside Word or Notepad or wherever, I can do Insert C because Outlook is running now.
Thursday, 4-12-2007, run appointment by day P. Thursday, date, 4-12-2007, start time, 4 o'clock p.m., subject, condensed matter seminar, 1 of 1, list view.
So this pops up our dialog, and it can stay up there if you want. You can leave it there. You can alt-tab back to it if you want, or you can do Insert C to pop it back up again. But this is a very accessible dialog. It's using Outlook to get the data, but that's all it's using Outlook for. So whether you're using the Exchange server, whether you're just using your local calendar, doesn't matter. It will all come up in this particular dialog. And so this dialog, because we made sure it's accessible, we made it very refined and very specific to where it works with a screen reader just out of the box, as you would expect. This is what Outlook should have probably done with their interface. But if I tab off, well, first of all, by default, I'm in the list view of all the appointments. And you heard it say Thursday, 4/12, one appointment by day. So my list view currently is showing just the day for the appointments for the 12th today. Just came up with the default today. But if I tab off of this.
Read only. Edit box. Details L. Motor Billy Doug. Recurring event. Start Thursday, April 12, 2007.
This basically just gives me more detailed information, and this is a read-only edit box, so I could arrow up and down through this for the particular appointment I had selected in my list view. I only had one. So it's now giving me further information about this particular appointment. The same as if I were in Outlook and I brought up the appointment in Outlook, it would have opened up a dialog and shown me all that information. Well, we've taken the main part of that and put it in this edit box. I can hit tab again.
Time span. Date. Radio button. Check. One.
So this is a radio button. I'm on day for time span, but I can go to work week.
Time span.
My list view just visually changed to show me all the appointments for the current work week, and work week is defined in Outlook. I can go into Outlook and say my work week is from Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day, and that's the appointments that it will show me for work week, and I can and that is accessible in Outlook. That part of it is accessible.
Time span. W. Radio button.
Or just the week. Yes. And again, I can define my week to be Monday to Sunday or whatever, however I define my particular work week or my week. Or I can go month.
Time span.
So I can see visually I have 33 appointments for the month of April in 2007. And my list view is updated. If I go back to my list view, I would see all those appointments that are up there. I can also show year. You can't even do that in Outlook. But I could go down to show all the year appointments. And it will calculate. I have 290, for instance, in this case, appointments for the entire year of 2007. Or I can go down to custom.
Time span. Custom S.
And custom just allows me to set the beginning and end date for anything. So if I just wanted to go too quickly to December 13th, I could say custom, type 12/13/07, hit then hit my shortcut, Alt-P to go back to appointments, and boom, I would see all the appointments for that day. Or I can put in a range of days from beginning to end. So as long as it doesn't exceed a year, we'll let you show that up in the list box. So let me go back to day real quick, and then I'm going to tab off to
show appointments. Checkbox. Check.
Show appointments is a checkbox in this dialog that just says, do you want to show the appointments or not in that list view? And you might say, well, why wouldn't I want to show those? Well, the next checkbox might answer that. So let me tab again.
Display. Show available times key. Checkbox.
So show available times is very cool because if I'm looking at, let's say, a day, and I want to look at all my appointments in the day, I want to know what I have available so that I can, you know, maybe go to the bathroom or something. I don't know. So I can show available times in here. If I check this, it will show me the available times based on my work hours that, again, you configured in Outlook for your work day, and it will then give you all the available times in that slot. So if you're only interested in your available times, you could uncheck your show appointments, and you would just see the available, or you can have them intermixed. Yes, question?
About creating an appointment. I mean, you're looking at the appointments that you've got created.
Mm-hmm.
Where were you when you created the
appointment? I'm getting there.
Oh.
Sorry. Got to show you all the good stuff here first before we can do that. So, also, because I'm selected for day, the next checkbox is disabled. But if I were selecting anything bigger than a day, there's another checkbox that says compact. And what compact means is, let's say I'm showing work week, and I see I have 50 appointments. Well, it's kind of tedious to go through those. So compact would just show Monday, 5 appointments. Tuesday, 2 appointments. Wednesday, 10 appointments. And then I can arrow up and down, and I would only see the days of the month, the days of the week, or if month, the days of the month. And if I hit enter, then it would explode it into day view for those appointments. So that's what compact does. If I go past those.
Previously button.
Previous. So if I'm set in day view, that's my time span, and I hit enter on this button, it would go to the previous day. And notice the shortcut was V, so I could do Alt V. So I'm in my list view. I want to know, what did I do yesterday? I could do Alt V, and boom, I would see all the appointments for yesterday. Or I could do
current R button.
current, if I just quickly want to go to today, I can do Alt-R or go to this button and hit Enter. That will immediately bring me to today, regardless of the view that I'm in. If I'm in week or year or whatever, it will take me to today. Tab again.
Next button.
Next, so obviously if we can go previous and current, we can go Alt-X for next. It would just go to the next component. If I'm month, it would go to the next month and show me all those. And here we go, next tab.
New M button.
New, N is the shortcut, so Alt-N, or tabbing here and hitting Enter, would actually open up Outlook's new dialog. It is Outlook's dialog. So if I hit Enter right here, Outlook...
Contact with appointment. Rich edit. Subject you.
This is the dialog from Outlook. It is the dialog that we just asked it to pop up. Now, if you had an available time that was up in your list view and you had it highlighted and you hit New from there, then we would default to that day, that time in this dialog. So that makes it kind of nice. But this dialogue is fully accessible. They at least did this part right. So this dialogue is fully accessible. You can tab around. You can open this up, do whatever you want, add your appointment.
Dialogue.
And as soon as you add the appointment, it would then immediately update the list view. If an appointment comes from an Exchange server, our list view would update automatically as well. Or you can manually refresh it with the F5 key, and it will refresh our list view also with the current appointments if things are really happening in the background fast that you want to see. Other options past the new was
open.
So here again, I showed you the details edit box that shows you all the details of the appointment that you had selected. We didn't put all of the data there. So if you want all the gory details, you can hit enter on open, and it will again open up the standard Outlook dialog with all the data for that particular appointment. Now, if it happened to be a reoccurring appointment, it will ask you, do you want to open up the original appointment that created the reoccurring whole thing, or just the appointment for that particular time. Okay, because I can set up a reoccurring appointment every Friday morning at 8, I have my bagel. Okay. So, well, maybe this Friday, you know, Chris got me working, so I couldn't eat that, so I had to cancel that particular appointment, so I could do that if I wanted to. So I can hit... And then delete is how you actually delete an appointment. So if you have an appointment highlighted at the top in the list view, you'd hit enter here or hit the shortcut of Alt-E, and it would delete that appointment. And again, if it were a reoccurring appointment, it would ask, do you want to delete the series or do you want to delete that particular appointment? You would be able to do that. And then the one last one is just close the dialog. So all of this gives you everything you'd need, really, for appointments. Question? Yes?
If I got it right, then what you did is you wrote your own dialogue to display the information.
Correct.
Right. But you're using Outlook's dialogue to enter the information.
Right, because the dialogue from Outlook was still accessible. It's still very good. It asks you all the questions. Why duplicate that part? But the being able to navigate through your appointments or to see or to set what day you're on even was just too problematic. So we decided to take all of that component and just put it in our own dialog.
And then sort of fit in place and you install
WindowEyes? It just comes as part of WindowEyes. It's just part of WindowEyes.
So it drops down into Outlook's calendar in the appropriate place, so to speak, so you don't have to worry about it.
Exactly, right. We just take care of all of it for you, and it just works beautifully, as long as Outlook is running. If I would have done Insert C, which brought up this dialog, without Outlook, it would have just said, I forget what it says, but something like Outlook needs to be running for this to function. And you just launch it and put it in your taskbar and forget about it. It just works.
Sounds good. Hang on a second, Doug. Let me ask, is MDET here? Okay, he's here. Okay. Okay, we have, what time is it right now?
20 till.
20 till. Okay, so we got about 5 minutes before we can take a quick break. So I'm going to let Doug wrap up his presentation. And if you guys have any more questions, you can also talk to Chris at the exhibit tomorrow as well. So far, you know, everything that we've heard about WindowEyes is made me more determined to stick with it. So I will let him continue, and we'll get our other presenter on shortly.
Thank you. That's his polite way of saying I got 5 minutes to get out of here. I thought I had 6 hours. Yes, Chris will be here at the exhibit hall the entire time, I believe, and he does have brochure information. He has demos. Are you handing out 30-minute or 30-day demos?
Both of them.
Okay, so he does have, he has 30-day demos, he has 30-minute demos, whatever you guys would like. So everything, the only difference is he's probably handing out 6.0 versions. I'm showing 6.1. The main reason is we weren't actually shipping 6.1 when he came, but I think by tomorrow we will be shipping 6.1. But again, 6.0 to 6.1 is a free upgrade. Everything that I'm showing today will be available when that 6.1 actually ships. Yeah, question? The infrared capabilities, that's really a functionality of the hardware that you have on your computer. WindowEyes will be there driving whatever component that you're doing, but WindowEyes itself doesn't have to deal with it. That's up to your hardware. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like saying, does WindowEyes support a printer or have a printer? Well, it supports all of them, but it doesn't really deal with it. Yes, question?
Any advantage to upgrading if you're a Windows XP user at this point? Mm-hmm. Any advantage of 6.1?
Good question. Well, it's free. We've done some things within XP itself. You can look on our webpage when we announce it. Well, even now, I think if our public beta is up there, you can get the README, which will discuss all of the changes. Obviously the majority is Vista, but there's still Office 2007. We cleaned up some things. We found in our 6.0 version we neglected to support Braille. Don't know how that happened. Part of that problem is, again, the same problem we had with Vista, is that we supported Office 2007 in our 6.0 release early December. Well, Office 2007 didn't ship until January 30th. So there was nobody testing it except us, and somehow that slipped by us. Anyway, we fixed that. That's supported now in 6.1. So things like that. So there will be quite a few non-Vista-related things for 6.1. So I would still recommend you do that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you can't beat the price. So you just go to the webpage and you can download it for the upgrade for free on that. Well, I certainly appreciate everybody sitting through all of this. There's tons of stuff within WindowEyes. I only scratched just the tip of the surface of this because it's difficult to talk about what a screen reader can do in all of its aspects. But there's tons and tons of WindowEyes that we didn't specifically discuss. I'd be glad to stay or whatever and meet with some of you, or Chris can certainly work with some of you guys on any particular questions or any specific examples that you wanted to see. But are there any other questions? Otherwise, I will bow out. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Geoffrey and Chris Park from GW Micro. As Doug has said, there's a lot of things that WindowEyes can do, and there's a lot of things that could be covered. Unfortunately, we are constrained by time. The thing is that there is a way for those of you that need to have your employers, move to Windows Vista, or they choose to move to Windows Vista. You can do the same thing and be up there with them. There's no reason why you have to be held back. But the greatest thing is that you guys are now aware that there is something else other than just JAWS as a tool to get around the internet or the computer world. So thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate it. So how many of you people have computers? How many of you people like to use the internet without using the computer? Well, it's a doable thing. And I'm going to turn the microphone over to Roger to introduce our next presenter. And Roger's going to tell you basically what he's going to talk about. So, Roger, have a microphone.
I've been acquainted with MDAD Con for some time now, probably 4 or 5 years, I think. And he's got a company called Internet Speech, which produces a system called NetEcho. And they have contracts with some people to make their particular sites accessible by phone, such as the San Francisco Lighthouse, where you can, if you're a user of your client at San Francisco Lighthouse, you can dial up and get their website and so forth, and get their broadcast, their radio reading service and everything. But he's also got a program, a system that anybody can subscribe to and use the internet pretty much with nothing but a telephone. And even if you got a computer, you may want to, when you're traveling or whatever, you may want to use the internet without a computer. So, and I think of the people who've tried to do this, Internet Speech has probably done the, arguably done the best job. So we wanted MDAD to come. He's going to be here. He's going to be, I think, on the general session. He's also going to be on the seniors and CCCLV session Saturday. And, you know, ACB passed a resolution a couple of years ago saying that we need to make sure that everybody in ACB has access as near as possible the assets that you get through having access to the web and to the internet, whether they've got computers or not. If they want a computer and don't have one, figure out a way to get one. If they don't have a computer and don't want one, figure out a way they can get to the internet without a computer. So here's part of the answer. Amdad Khan with Internet Speech.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Roger, as well as thank you, Louis, for inviting me to make a presentation here about the voice internet. And Roger has described it very nicely, so I don't want to say too much. Just go ahead and start. And thank you, all of you, in advance for your time. I would like to make sure that it is very interactive. I am going to talk a little bit, but also there is some demo like the previous one so that we can interact and explain it well. So again, internet by phone and your voice, which includes surfing, searching, email, e-commerce, streaming audio, and more. You know, today we are in the information age, and information is money like time is money. And the largest source of information is the internet. And our point before we begin is that internet should be for everyone because this is the largest source of information. So, very short background about our company. We are based in San Jose. We were founded about 7 years ago. And the service has been going on for about 3.5 years now. Our vision is to provide voice-based access to three things: internet, computers, and devices like PDAs and cell phones. And our mission is to implement the first part of the vision, which is provide internet to everyone just using a phone and your voice. And that's what we are going to talk about today. Now, you know, it's good to talk about the fact that everyone should have the information, should have the access to the internet. But in reality, as you know, it's very limited today. There are about 2.2 billion phones in this world, considering both cell phone and wireline phone, as opposed to about 400 million connected computers. There are many other computers, about 600 million, but a lot of them are not connected. So about 450 million are connected to the internet. So the computer represents only a small fraction, 14% of the total telephone population. And besides, those people who have computers, not all of them can learn easily how to use it. And also some of them who already know how to use it find it difficult to keep on learning because every day something new happens, some pop-up, some adware, this way, that way, and all kinds of things are happening. And then the other major access mechanism is the cell phone or PDA. Those are great devices, but the user interface is very difficult, as you know, because of the small screen or a small keypad. And more importantly, you would need to have content that is rewritten in another language. In other words, you know, there are over 2 billion of websites, and to view a small content on the screen, cell phone screen, or listen to it using some TTS in cell phone screen, someone needs to rewrite those content. Today, those are rewritten with WML, you know, one language, or CHTML, but as you can figure out, rewriting over 2 billion of websites is not practical. So from internet speech, we have tried to overcome these two major problems by allowing internet access just by a single phone, I mean simple phone and your voice, which means that our goal is to take information from today's internet where billions of dollars have already gone into. So instead of rewriting that internet, which is not practical, why not exploit that information and write a software intelligent agent that can take that information and convert it or render it to any telephone in a manner that the content is short, precise, meaningful, easily navigable, and pleasant to listen to. If you can achieve those five features, then we have a good story. And that's exactly what we have. So we have written from internet speech a software intelligent agent that can take today's internet content and deliver it to you in a very useful manner. As you know, the internet was designed with visual access in mind, so all the information is laid out on a website that attracts your eyes but not your ears. And converting them or translating them or rendering them in real time so that it is pleasant to your ears and easily navigable, easily finding contents is a very, very difficult problem. And that's what we have overcome. So instead of saying much, let me now show you a demo. Basically, it's a canned demo. And after the canned demo or pre-recorded demo, if we have time, we can try also a real demo. Let me start here.
Welcome to Internet Speech, the company that gives you the entire internet, your voice, and any telephone. Surf the net, check your email, or even shop online without the need for a computer. Our voice internet technology, called NetEcho, greets you with a pleasant automated voice and lets you give simple voice commands like Yahoo or email to get the net-based information you want. NetEcho uses our breakthrough technology to translate the requested web page information into text and reads it out loud to you, minus those annoying and slow-loading banners, ads, and images you see when using a computer to access the internet. Imagine driving down the road and having your email read to you through your cell phone, or being able to check on the weather, request a stock quote, or check flight status easily and quickly. NetEcho is perfect for mobile professionals who need quick access to information while on the go, people without a computer who recognize the power of the internet for getting information, the visually impaired and blind who find that the visual, computer-based internet experience doesn't always meet their needs, senior citizens who prefer to use a more user-friendly device like a telephone over a computer. NetEcho can even help businesses, giving their customers or mobile employees information from web pages or their own intranet. Examples include easy access to product and pricing information, order or account status, purchasing, product support, and more, without the need for a computer or human operator. For more information, go to internetspeech.com, and please contact us if there is some way we can help you. Please enjoy the demo now. We'll be standing by to discuss how NetEcho can help increase your business.
So first, I'm going to show you a surfing demo. After you make the phone call, this is what you're going to hear.
Welcome to NetEcho, powered by Internet Speech. Please save or key in your 10-digit account number.
408-360-0001.
Please say or key in your 4-digit PIN number.
1234.
Again, you are not using a computer, all just using telephone.
Main menu. Please select from one of the following by saying that one or the category name. Surf the net. Web search. Stock quote. My email. Today's news. More options. My Yahoo.
And in the real system, you can jump in. You can just say whatever you want to say. You don't have to wait.
My AOL. Help me, please. Or press 9.
Page highlights.
Page highlights will let you hear only the highlights of the page, saving time.
Page highlight is enabled. Main menu. Please select.
Surf the net.
To go to our popular website, say popular website. To go to bookmarked website, say bookmarked website. To use interactive spelling, say interactive spelling.
Popular website.
Please say your popular website.
or a list of popular websites, please say List Popular Websites.
SpeechWorks.
Thank you. I'm going to SpeechWorks.com. The highlights of this page are, first highlight, SpeechWorks congratulates winners of third annual best practices competition. Second highlight, Amtrak and SpeechWorks.
So as you can see, instead of listening everything on the page, it is giving you highlights or important information.
Third highlight, SpeechWorks deployed nation's first speech-enabled instant loan application.
First one.
I am going there.
Now, in this page, she's going, she will read only the relevant story, not everything else.
News release, SpeechWorks congratulates winners of third annual best practices competition. Panel of industry experts selects Amtrak, National Service, and Singapore Post for best applications and increased automation. Poker Raton, Florida. Conversations 2002, October 7, 2002 at its annual international user conference. International.
And you can jump to the next paragraph or previous paragraph, you know, or even previous page and select another highlights, or you can check your email, you know, news, weather, horoscope, search any website.
Web-based email at this point, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
Is it web-based email?
We support web-based as well as POP3. So, although the, you know, yeah, so it's the Yahoo, Hotmail, as well as POP3. POP3 includes almost all common emails like Earthlink or NetZero or SBC Global and so forth. You can also listen to streaming audio, which means that you can listen to internet radios or music, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. So I'm going back to the presentation, and we can show a specific demo, more demo later on. But let me focus on the presentation so that we are done. So as you have heard, you know, you have the option to listen only the highlights of the page instead of listening everything on the page, because listening to everything on the page is possible. We have a mode called a screen reader mode. It will start from the top of the page and go bottom of the page, and as it reads, it will announce all the links so that you can go there if you like to. But in general, you don't have time to do all those things over the telephone. So we have these highlights that intelligent agent calculates for you using the same algorithm that our eyes and brain use. You know, when a sighted person look into a website, our eyes get attracted with features like font size, color, density, meaning, and so forth. So we use those information and some artificial intelligence rules to calculate highlights. And as you have heard, most of the highlights are good highlights. And if you don't find them in the first three, you can always say next, next, next. And if you know some word that you are looking for in the highlights, like some story today regarding something, then you can find that on that page, saving also a lot of time. So there are nice ways to find or get to the desired information. And then when you select that highlight, this is the beauty. It goes to the desired page, and instead you spend time to figure out where the story is on that page, we find it for you. NetEcho finds it for you automatically, as you have heard. That is a huge saving, you know, when you listen to some content. And the value proposition, you know, what this technology can do for you, basically, you know, it's it bridges the digital divide and language divide. Digital divide means, you know, people who cannot use a computer or any other devices and left out from this internet content. Language divide is similar to digital divide. You know, many people, on this internet today, you know, about 75 to 80% content is in English. So people in countries like China or Japan and other South America, they are actually left out from a major, major part of the internet. What we can do, using our third-party software like IBM or others, we can translate the website from English to another language, and then in real time read that in the local language. So, for example, you can ask CNN in Mandarin, and then English content will be translated to Mandarin, and you will hear that in real time. So that's how we bridge the language divide. Now, you might say, well, the language translation software has errors and blah, blah, blah. Absolutely right. But, you know, when you translate a novel, there will be lots of errors. But when you translate simple web pages, you know, it's not that bad. It's useful. It's also help the bottom of the pyramid. You know, in this world, there are a little bit over 6 billion people. And today, about maximum a billion people can access internet by sharing the internet kiosk, internet cafe, and computers and all those things. But the rest 5 billion people, you know, do not have the internet. And as you can imagine, it's not possible to bring computers to them in the near future so that everybody in this world will have the internet. And so, you know, to really help this bottom of the pyramid people, we need something like simple telephone, where it's easy to learn and everyone almost has a telephone. So it's good for many service providers who can provide additional services. It's also good for businesses because when you call a bank today, for example, you can answer 4 or 5 questions, then you will get some content, right? But these applications that you call, are called IVR or interactive voice response systems, they are all a standalone application, meaning that they are not really connected to the internet. But as you know, a sighted person or a visually impaired person, when you use the screen reader, you can go to any website application. So what we are doing, we are basically moving all these standalone IVR applications to web-based IVR application. So any application that is on the web is also available either through a computer or through a telephone. And the final value that we bring to the industry is a huge one, that is the accessibility. You know, as of today, the accessibility we have heard, the Section 508, these are all talking about accessibility through a computer or a device. It does not talk about accessibility through a simple telephone. Here, the degree of accessibility increases significantly when you bring the same content through a telephone because government now can communicate with much more citizens or even much more government people. So accessibility is very key. And the next thing I'm going to talk about, the key features, as you have heard in the demo, you know, you can surf any website, and you can search any word, you can send receive email. You can also shop online on some limited sites today. One of them is San Francisco Lighthouse, but we'll be adding more sites like Amazon and Walmart and so forth. You can also listen to streaming audio or music. You can listen to horoscope, weather, Bible. But starting with Surf the Net, there are 4 ways you can go there. You have heard 3 of them, like popular website, bookmarked, interactive spelling, or keypad entry. You can spell any website one time using voice or keypad, and NetEcho will save it for you so that next time you don't have to spell anymore. Spelling is also good for searching. You can search using any search engine like Google, Yahoo, AltaVista, MSN, and also we support on-site search as well as on-page find. These are kind of similar things, but not exactly the same. But it allows you to find your desired information fast. Email, as I said, we support most of the web-based major ones, especially Yahoo, Hotmail, and then POP3 emails. You can send, receive, reply, compose, delete. You have address book, 100 locations for every user. So you can have 100 email addresses or 100 website addresses that you can change, edit by yourself over the phone. There is also other services like directory assistance. You know, if you call from your home phone, you pay about 50 cents or more for the directory assistant. $95? Oh, boy, I didn't know that. That's even worse. You can save those. NetEcho is only $14 a month, so only with 7 calls you can save that. Because directory assistance is free, it's included in our service. You can do both yellow page and white pages. And on the streaming audio, we support now major streaming audio, MP3, PLS, WMA, and ASX. We'll be supporting real audio later on. Now, the next important thing we have done in the product is the user interface. Whatever features we have, unless you can use them very easily, they are useless. So we have made sure that in the user interface, the level is very limited, which means that you can get to the content only in two or three steps. Not like in an IVR application, you have to go through five or seven steps before you get to something and you forget what those steps were. So, for example, in the surf the net, we just say surf the net, website name, then you select your content. You already heard your content, you are making your selection, and the next step you hear your content. So only three or four steps. And also when you talk, and if she cannot understand you, she will tell you, I think you said, so you have a chance to correct her. Or in the worst case, if you get a cold or something, you can always press key. For every command, there is a keypad entry command. So, you know, the recognition is not a big issue here. Also, you can jump in or barge in. If she's talking, you don't have time to listen. Just say whatever you would like to say, and then she will listen to you. And we have made sure that the voice recognition is good because we are using less than 50 words, which means that, you know, the overlap between words is very, very small, and any accent is, you know, my accent is not very good. She understands my accent very well, so you can understand from there, you know. Now, how users are using the service, mainly we have different types of users, visually impaired, blind, elderly, some highly mobile, and some digital divide people not knowing how to use a computer or not comfortable. Now, among the visually impaired and blind, we think the loneliness is one key factor because two things. One is loneliness. The other one is getting access to vast source of information. And normally they use email, surfing, searching, and streaming audio, followed by Bible, horoscope, weather. Because Bible, horoscope, weather, I guess you can get from many other sources, but email, surfing, and searching, streaming audio, these are the key. Streaming audio, we started about 8-9 months ago, and we thought not many people will use it, but actually one-third of our current NetEcho users are using streaming audio, paying extra $6 a month. And the reason they are doing it is because either radio talk show or music from different countries like Australia or England or even within these states, different states, you know, this is really handy for them. Let's see. The next is how they are using from percentage standpoint. So email is used about 35-40% of the time. Surfing about 20-50% of the time. Searching 10-30% of the time. And other features 10%. And in each call, a blind person normally stay 25-40 minutes in each call. Elderly people stay around 12-15 minutes, digital divide people 10-12 minutes, and highly mobile people, they don't stay that long, only 3-5 minutes, check their emails or something and hang up. And most of the people use toll call because now there is nationwide unlimited calling plan, and then some toll free, and some, you know, second is actually cell phone because cell phone has unlimited long distance or some limited long distance. Now, the next is how hard it is to learn. You know, as I said from the beginning or at the beginning that it's much easier than computer. You know, you don't need 3-4 months to learn this. Only 2 days, maybe 3 days. Some people learn in few hours. So that's very important. And our customer support is very helpful. During the first couple of days, we work with new users who are not familiar with the internet at all, but they have heard www on radio, television, newspapers, and very curious. So we work with them, and key questions they ask is, what is the difference between surfing and searching? The basic question. You know. So we have made a nice FAQ. From the main menu, if you say frequently asked questions, you will get most of the answers. You can say easy guide that will tell you how to use the service very quickly so you can learn them. So tips are handy online. And the next common question is, how do you bookmark a website? How do you erase it or overwrite it and all those things? All right, what's coming? Well, always with any technology, if something is not coming, then it is not good, right? So what's coming is generic form filling. Right now we support most of the forms, but these are basic to medium complex forms. Generic form filling will allow you, as I said, to do shopping on Amazon or banking and so forth, online book reading. Better rendering using more language processing so that you can naturally say sentences. And at some time, we'll have question and answer-based search where you will naturally ask something. That's the final ultimate goal human being have had for a long time. And we'll, you know, offer that someday in the future. I mean, that's our goal too, because naturally if you can get to the information, that's great. Voice internet will also enable a simplest communication device. Right now it's the voice internet, but we will give you a voice computer. What that means is you will be able to save your files, personal files, resumes, and send your resumes and so forth. So you will have a virtual computer online. Doing edits and manipulating your directories and everything. And then the other important thing we will be bringing is called voice over IP call using PSTN phone. See, when we are on the internet by making a phone call, because you are on the internet, we will ask you another question. Would you like to call anyone? Suppose you say yes. Then we will ask you which voice over IP engine. Is it in a Vonage or Skype? Suppose you say Skype, then we will connect you with Skype. But think about it. You are calling from a regular PSTN or regular POTS phone or regular cell phone. So without a broadband connection or without a broadband phone, you will be able to talk to rest of the world. So the NetEcho will allow you not just talk to the internet, but also talk to the people. And the other one, the final product that we have, final as of today, I mean, there will be more in future, but important one is we call it micro browser, which is mainly for sighted people who would like to see the same content on a display screen. As you know, today, as I mentioned at the beginning, one have to rewrite the content with another language to see it on cell phone screen, but since we render to small contents, as you have heard, when you go to a website and select a highlight, it goes to the desired page and reads only column at a time or the relevant story. Now, relevant story, which are usually in column format, can easily be displayed on a cell phone screen at ease. And that's how the whole wireless internet problem will be solved with NetEcho rendering technology. That's what I have here, and I'll be happy to show more demo and answer any questions that you might have. Yes?
I have a quick question.
Sure.
Okay. Sorry, I know somebody had their hand up, but I know I'd be Roger
go ahead,
the microphone.
Then I'll get the gentleman.
Okay. You mentioned email, and so if I want to send an email message, I can dictate a message and it would be converted into a text file and sent on its way, or is this only for reviewing, not for sending?
No. Well, yes or no. If you can reply to that email or to any email in two ways. One is by voice, so you naturally speak and it will go as a WAV file. Or you can type using telephone keypad. You can type text, or you can type by voice. You can spell, like, I am coming tomorrow, and that will go as a text. But if you say something in a natural language, then it will go as a WAV file. Because the speech recognition technology has come a long way, but it still has a long way to go until the natural language will be recognized. So, yeah. Specific application, like a medical application, if you limit the number of words to, say, 2, 3, 4, maximum 500, yes, you can send, you can convert voice to text, but not our natural language. Yes, please go ahead.
Is the voice limited to just a female voice?
At this time, we have quite a few requests from a number of users to add male voice, so we plan to add that soon.
Yeah, the issue is for people with hearing impairment, sometimes they can hear one kind of voice better than another kind.
Right. Yes. Go ahead. Yeah.
What about security?
Well, we don't add or subtract security. So whatever you say over the telephone, anybody can hear. It's like if you call a credit card company today or a shopping mall today, you give your credit card, there is a risk. Anybody can tap that. So from your call, your telephone to our server is not secure, but from our server to final completion of the transaction is very secure. This is partial answer. Now, in future, when we will support banking, for example, we will allow you only to call and do secure banking from your home phone or whichever phone you define to use with our service. So when the call come in, it will be recognized that it's from your personal phone, and so security will be there. Any other question? Yes, go ahead.
So, in other words, if you have flat rate long distance, then you can use it as long as you like?
Yes, yes. I forgot to mention the prices, but I distributed the literature. So, we have actually three programs. One is $14, $14 a month, unlimited usage, but you have to call a number in 408 area code San Jose. So if you have flat long distance, that's not an issue. It's only $14. Then we have toll free $23 a month for 5 hours or 300 minutes. And if you exceed that, then we charge 5 cents a minute for additional minutes. And then some people would like to use unlimited toll free. So some business people are using that. Based on their request, we started that 5-6 months ago, and that is $75 a month, unlimited toll-free. And there is a one-time setup fee of $20. And all these rates are without streaming audio, which means that you can do everything, surfing, searching, email, stock code, but no streaming audio. Streaming audio is $6 extra. And it's month-to-month after first month. So hope that answers your question. Yes. In the back.
Is the streaming audio additional if you're using a 75?
Yeah, also. So that will become 81.
Could you say something about how you work with somebody like the Lighthouse?
Yes. So, thank you for asking that question. So, this is the general service, but we also do special services for, organizations or companies and so forth. So, one of them is Lighthouse San Francisco. What we did based on their request, they can call and go to their website and listen only to their website. It's not the whole internet. And they can listen to TV ad, radio ad. They have a radio station and also do shopping.
They just enroll with the Lighthouse. It doesn't cost anything, right?
So Lighthouse. Lighthouse pays us, but their members get it free. Yeah. Yes?
Is there like a user's guide or something to orient you in Braille or any other thing, or if not, what kind of setup do you have for teaching people?
Good point. Yes, we do have user guide in Braille, easy guide in Braille, and we used to have that in tape, but nobody makes tape anymore, at least we couldn't find. So we are going into CDs, and some of the customers said CD would be fine, but it's also online. So you can just say easy guide, and easy guide is a simple that get you started quickly, but we have a comprehensive user guide, which is about 24 page. That's in PDF online also. So which means that you can get everything over the telephone. If you have unlimited calling plan, then everything is fine. And you can also record in a recorder if you like. Not the whole thing, but specific things you are looking for.
And you said you have customer support.
Yes, we do have customer support to help you. Most of the customers after 3 or 4 days don't call unless they have specific issues because they easily learn. Yes.
I know, for example, the My Mail station and those kind of things that have been marketed to seniors for ease and all of that, they can only write a very short email. at a time. Is this with the email capability currently? Is it the same way? You can only write like 100 words or something?
No, there's no limit. You can receive text email, you can receive as long, I mean, there's no limit, and you can send also long email if it is text, but if you say it, then it's 2 minutes long. So if it is more than 2 minutes, that's because, not for us, because the recipient system will not receive such a large email.
WAV files are big.
So. Big. So if you have to send a long email, just send 2 or 3. Or use voice. I mean, we were very surprised that some blind people, they type more than a page very fast. You know, I can't do that. It's really.
Just using the phone keypad.
Yeah, just using phone keypad, yeah. Very fast.
Well, it's like teenagers learn to use the cell phone keypad.
Yeah, yeah. Question in the back with black jacket, yes.
Yeah, I was wondering if you can use it with chat rooms.
Yeah, good question. You know, we have a request from quite a few people to do chat, and we will do that. But that probably will not be this year. We are shooting for some banking and some online book reading this year, because those are, I mean, there are more people requesting those things. So, but chatting will be coming also.
Wow.
Yes, blue jacket.
The final format. You are sending the audio when you, when somebody gets email from somebody who has spoken.
It's a WAV.
Microsoft WAV format files. Have you ever thought of compressing them in MP3 and making them faster? It would be smaller and
receive
faster.
Yes, that's a good point. No, we haven't done that, but it's in our roadmap, you know, compressing those. By the way, along in that line, we do support email attachment. You can listen to PDF, Microsoft Word, PowerPoint, and Excel, and of course HTML and text. And also you can listen to PDF websites and Microsoft Word websites. Any other question? Yes. I see two hands. Yeah, green jacket, yes. Go ahead. The green sweater.
Okay.
Yes.
What if another provider I was playing with has a setup where one can also listen to small MP3 attachments?
Yes, that was requested, and we will support also MP3 attachments in future. Yeah, we will also let you. Right now, you can forward email, but you cannot forward attachments. So we'll support that as well. And I saw another hand behind. Can you speak? Oh, yes. We have now 4 languages, English, Japanese, Chinese, and German. So, but they're not available here. Yeah.
Not Bengali?
Not yet. Oh, can you call to the another country? That's what will be coming. We don't have it yet in one of the future product. That you will be able to call anybody in the world with voice over IP?
Well, but if you support Skype, doesn't Skype allow worldwide communication?
Exactly. So we'll use Skype to do that, but the beauty is that you don't have to buy a special phone or broadband.
Okay.
A lot of good questions. Any other question or...
You're exhibiting, aren't you?
Yes, good point. I keep forgetting that. So we have a table here tomorrow and Saturday. So please feel free to stop by with any questions or comments or suggestions or, you know, more demos and so forth.
Well, you have a live thing there?
For live, what we do, we'll be happy to take your name and number, because to do live from here, I don't think we have a telephone line, and cell phone in that room will be noisy.
Yeah.
So what we do, we will call you and do live demo over the telephone. And we normally have a list there, so you are welcome to write down your name after the talk here or also in our table.
And you will be on the general session and on the Saturday morning.
Right.
Senior blind and CCC will be
there. Right. Thank you very much again. And, as I said, I'll be here.
Emdet, thank you very much. Very informative. I'm going to try this out, see how it works out for me. I'm getting too lazy to work the keyboard, but I never shut up anyway, so it'll be fun for me.
By the way, one last comment. We were on the main menu. Some of you might have heard. And also, there are a lot of members from CCB and ACB are using the service.
What time is it?
Yes. Oh, 3:33. All right, Amdad, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We have about 27 minutes, and I'm going to take some time now to talk about. If I can shut my phone up. No, hey, stop it! Stop it! Okay, good. Anyhow, we'd like to talk to you guys about something that I'm going to be exhibiting tomorrow. There is a person by the name of R.J. Cooper who does a lot of stuff for persons with different handicaps. He also carries a what I consider to be blind-friendly MP3 player that also is a speech program, not a JAWS, not a Window Eyes, not a Dolphin program. This is a small application screen program that in a pinch can help those of you that do computer support or have to reinstall Windows for whatever reason, you don't have the speech program loaded, and you need to get speech to get you going. Okay, this phone is going off. Okay, anyhow, so given that this program I will be demonstrating, I have the MP3 player with me today, and I will show it there. But just to give you an idea, are you guys familiar with the iPod Shuffle?
Yeah.
Okay, this is similar to the iPod Shuffle, but it, well, you can shuffle up and down the street. It's not a dance, but it is a device. I bought one myself simply because I like to listen to music when I'm on the go. When I'm working out, I like to listen to music. I also like to listen to books, and I download books, audiobooks on MP3. And I copy them. Unlike the iPod Shuffle, I don't need iTunes to copy information to it from my computer. I just drag it and dump it over, because when you plug it in, it sees that the device as another drive. So then you have access to music. I'm going to play a little bit, see if it works, see if I didn't kill the battery this morning, because I was working out this morning and I had it playing with me. And let's see what comes up. I hope it's not too loud. Let's see here. Okay, I'm going to go to the next track. Let's see.
Find out something about your taste in music. Or lack thereof.
Put it a little louder.
Somebody's criticizing my music. I'm sorry. Let's see.
There's some Mozart.
I'm too young to listen to classical music, Roger.
What?
I'm too young to listen to classical music. Now this thing, as I said, it's about the size of a iPod Shuffle, a little longer, what? What I like about it also is that I like to listen to books, and right now I was showing it to somebody a couple of days ago, and I had loaded let me get to it in a second here. Okay. Okay, here we go.
Getting started for Mac OS 10, version 10.4, Tiger.
Chapter 7,
browsing and email.
If I want to scroll, I can just hold the button down for a few seconds, and it'll be scrolling to the same file without having to skip to the next one.
You can use the Mail and Safari applications to send and receive your email and search.
And I can put it on pause and answer the phone or do whatever, go back to it.
Chapter gives you information to help you connect to the internet.
So it's very accessible. I'm going to be demonstrating this at the exhibit tomorrow.
Comes with an email application.
In the exhibit room someplace.
You can use the mail and
I have no idea what booth I'll be assigned to me, but I'm sure I'll be making noise and you guys will be hearing me.
Okay. VoiceOver with Mail and Safari.
The price for the 512 meg MP3 player is $39. The 1 gig unit is $59, and the 2 gig unit is $69. Oh. It's called the RJ MP3 reader. MP3 player. I'm sorry, MP3 reader, MP3 player, and you can order it online from rjcooper.com, or you can go to 1-800-RJ-COOPER and place an order. Okay. Now, as I said, this is an MP3 player stick that also you can buy it with the Thunder RJ speech program. The speech program was written by the same person that wrote Narrator for Microsoft, and he's developed a product that you can plug in, and in a pinch you need a you might say crude speech program, but a program that will get you through that point where you need to have speech accessibility and there's nobody there to lend a hand or whatever. Plug this guy in, and as long as your sound card is running, you're up, you'll get speech to do whatever you need to do to get yourself up and running with whatever else you're working with. It doesn't make any changes to your computer. It doesn't modify anything. It's a very transparent and very easy to operate utility. So for those of you that are interested, I will have it available.
So it works with a USB port?
Yes.
Transfer stuff to it?
Yeah, you can transfer, you can upload and download files or music on the stick. The speech program does run off the USB port. Let's see, what else can I tell you about it? Oh, they also have a version that comes on a stick that's both a sound card or and speech synthesizer software, which is nice because if you go to a public library and they have disabled the sound cards so kids don't go in and play games or play music instead of doing the research in the library, as a blind user, you depend on the speech on audio to be functional. Well, now there's no real reason why you couldn't access the same computer, because you can plug this thing in, have audio and speech. It's not, as I said, it is not a JAWS or a Window Eyes or a Dolphin, but it's something that in a pinch can help.
Can it read text?
It reads text.
Can you store text in the device and read like a text file with the speech?
Can you load a text file into it and have it read it? No. If you load an MP3 file, it'll play. If you load a WAV file or a WMA, it'll play them.
If you have a book, it has to be converted into MP3 before you put it in.
That's correct, which is what I've been doing lately.
That's some of the Kurzweil's got to do.
Kurzweil and OpenBook both have the ability to allow you to convert to MP3. So that's a doable thing. So I just thought I'd take a few moments of your time to let you guys know that this device does exist. It is something very I find it to be very blind friendly.
Great price.
And the price is good. If you get it, if you want just the MP3 player, the prices I gave are good prices for it. If you want to get the stick with the Thunder RJ software and MP3 player, well, then the price kind of jumps up a little bit. $199. And if you want to get the big boy with the sound card, the USB sound card and the speech program on the stick, that's $249. But it's a tool that you can take with you wherever you go. I've been using it to work on clients' computers, and also when I go do work at the university, it's pretty much paid for itself already. So it's worth it. Okay, so if you, yeah, it's a small stick. I will have Roger, I'll hand it to Roger, and Roger will describe it. Okay.
The size of a, what would you say? It's about half an inch, between a quarter and half an inch thick, and it's 4 inches long and 1 inch wide, I would say. It's just a little stick. You can carry it on a key ring. Yeah.
Yep. So for those of you that want to check it out, I will have it set up. I'll have a laptop running. And you can use this with Windows XP or Windows Vista. And believe me, I've been working it with Windows Vista because I had a hell of a problem trying to get my Windows Vista to be functional. And I got to the point where I just said, the hell with it. I'm going to try something else. And I was in an area where I didn't have my my thumb drive with Windows Eyes, and I didn't have my CD. So I remember this thing. I plugged it in, not knowing if it was going to really, really work, because I really hadn't tried it yet. And it got me out of a jam. So it's a nice little tool to keep handy.
So, we've got 15 minutes for an open.
Yeah. Was that, were you asking a question, Mike?
Can I have a sheet for I'll play all of those books?
No. No, it's only an MP3 WMA / wave player. No, you need to have a special driver for Audible. Okay, we got about 15 minutes. Is there any questions, any issue that about anything related to technology or computers that Roger can answer for you guys? I have a question for you guys, if I can get some input. How many of you would you be interested in a hands-on training program for the future? If there was to be a hands-on program for those of you that want to learn, let's say, for example, just for the heck of it, we'll say Windows Eyes, and there was an opportunity to have a hands-on at the convention, have like a 2-hour training session to learn, you know, have either a beginner or intermediate Windows Eyes seminar to learn about how to configure or use or modify or even create sets for Windows Eyes. Is there any interest in anything like that? I just threw a number 2 hours as a random number. It could be.
There is a hand in the back of the room.
There's a hand in the back of the room?
Raise your hand to blind people.
Yeah. Speak up. Raise your foot. Okay. Who's in the back? Who's me? Oh. And you'll be interested?
Huh? I'm Bonnie.
I might.
Who said I might?
Bonnie.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, because I want to get some input about something like that, because if there is a desire to do something, I would like to talk to Roger, see if Roger can coordinate something like that.
What about input on what you'd like this session to be in the future? Is this the kind of session you want on Thursday afternoon?
The only thing about it is that it only deals with the questions of people that use that particular program.
Well, during open session, you can ask any question. I mean, last time we had people asking questions about the Versa Braille. So, I mean, we're, the objective is to try and give you guys assistance on things. And if in the past, if we didn't know the answer, for those of us that were up front, I was able to track down the answer and forward it to the person that was asking about it. So, this is why.
We could arrange it so more of the session would be open Q&A if you want it that way.
Since you, Louis, since you have said that we can ask any question, may I ask one?
Sure.
Okay. As an independent, observer, I have just one question, which is how you guys go about increasing membership for CCB and ACB in general.
It's a problem.
It's a problem. It's an interesting question. And who works on the membership committee?
Even the League of Women Voters is having trouble with membership.
There's a special membership meeting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there is a membership.
Okay.
But it's a big problem with organizations in general. People aren't joining organizations as much as they used to.
But I believe there are many blind people who do not belong to any organization, and yeah, going after them is probably a good idea, I guess.
Got any ideas?
You know, that's a very interesting thing. I happen to be involved with a chapter in Southern California that is primarily, well, I shouldn't say primarily. Most of its members are Hispanic or East LA chapter, and there's a vast number of people that have visual issues, have problems, and need somebody to advocate for them, but they have no clue as to what CCB is, and when they find out about CCB, they want to learn more, and sometimes helping them overcome the fear factor of, I'm going to be out of place, I don't feel right being there. We try to be as open and try and encourage people to get involved and do things. And sometimes it works, and other times it doesn't work.
What about the cultural issues?
There are.
Is that, you got to convince the people and their families that it's okay to be blind, or that it's okay.
That is one serious issue. As a matter of fact, I was talking to a person who is supposed to be helping me to get an article in the Hispanic newspaper regarding blind people accepting the fact that it is a way of life. It's part of life. You know, sometimes you dealt a bad card and you're stuck with a disability that is there, and choosing to ignore it just to fit into the cultural standard is not exactly, it's not right. They need to accept the fact that, hey, this blindness is not something you want, but it's something you have to learn to live with. And there are organizations that can help make life easier.
Really?
Yes.
I have one comment about that. This is Penny Frame from Greater LA Chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard a lot of young people saying that they'd like to be in some of these organizations, but they're not, a lot of times they feel that we don't address the things that they're interested in.
That's another issue, and that is very true. In the cultural thing, that is very true, because I have we've had some people that have come to our chapter for one meeting and have an idea of how they would like to see things done, and they feel like we're not addressing something they are interested in. And my thing to them is, we can address it. If you choose to take on, I'm more than happy to help anybody that wants to help themselves.
This is not just cultural. They feel like, they want to know how blind people date, live, that, and the other, and they feel like that, they don't address these issues. We're more of an older group.
Did you tell her that we date with our eyes closed?
As long as they don't join, it'll stay an older group, won't it?
Yep. Well, you know, we have a couple of members in our chapter who are young, who started out at the age of 18 and are now college, you know, students that are developing, evolving into a profession. One of them that comes to mind, our past president, who at the age of 21 decided he wanted to be chapter president. And he did a good job. He's a bright young man. He's starting to be a teacher. And, you know, he and I have talked about possible ways to get these people to open up and be more proactive in blindness-related issues or blind organizations. But it's a difficult thing that we haven't been able to crack.
Some of it's just human nature. Even the people who belong to the organization, most of them are not very active. It's yeah. something called the 80-20 rule. 80% of the work is done by 20% of the people.
Yep.
Louis,
yes.
Has the family site in Spanish helped any?
It has helped a lot. In certain areas, it has helped a lot. There's a couple of people and organizations. For example, the folks in... At East Los Angeles Occupational Center, for example, when I dropped a couple of brochures, I got called back and they even called me to ask me if it was okay for them to make copies and give to other people. And I said, hey, if you can push the power button on the copy machine, fire it up.
Oh, don't call them that. Call the office though. Send them for free.
Oh, okay.
They have the nice copies out there.
Hey, they got a nice fancy color copier.
Some combination of both, you know.
Yeah, no, I, you know, having those brochures in Spanish does help. It's made people be more aware. It's just that sometimes people are lazy, including me sometimes.
One of the things that struck me a long time ago, I was working with a bunch of groups that help people, youth with disabilities, and they were saying this... This one group down in Mississippi was a primarily African-American group, and the guy said to me that one of the problems he has when he goes to a little rural family and whatever, and says, you know, this guy has a disability. We need to, you know, get some training, get some job counseling, get some this and that. And they say, oh, no, this is God gave us this child and we're supposed to take care of him and it's a cross that we have to bear. And he said, I learned that what I have to say is God gave me to you also.
Yep.
God gives us burdens. He also gives us shoulders.
That's true. You know, what Roger just said is something that my wife, who is a independent living skills instructor, sees all the time, not only with Hispanics, but Orientals. When you have a 23-year-old that doesn't even know how to use, this is going to come to a shock to you guys, but she didn't know that you can stand under the shower and take a shower. Because she was instructed to always use a pail and a cup and sit on this chair, and that's how you bathe. She was afraid of the
shower.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be afraid of the shower because at the grad school they used to tell me that it'll scald you.
And it does scold you if you're not careful, but if you regulate the water, you know, there are some people that are so sheltered and are so backwards that the parents ought to be hung. But we're not going to start lynching parents now. But there is this thing about people, you know, the old phrase, the handicapped shouldn't be heard from, they should only be seen. And we got to break that barrier somehow.
Actually, Julie, this is Bonnie. One thing about this, I really wish we would have a forum for this whole subject somewhere. I think it needs to be addressed.
along with membership, and because we have the same problem with seniors that was voiced about younger people for the same reasons. You don't talk about stuff we want to do. Or
the membership meeting is opposite your meeting.
Exactly.
Actually, Bonnie, I did get an email from you, and I was traveling a lot, and I never got back to you, but I do have some things that I wanted to discuss with you. And so
I'll give you a call.
Okay.
I'm not up to email, which brings me to my other point, real quickly, because this is about technology.
Yes.
I'm going to go out on a limb that I may be the only one here because of my unique little situation of working for the state where they don't believe in providing much equipment. However,
you must not work for rehab.
No, I don't. That's my mistake. I find myself in this situation now that I'm going to buy something again, and maybe others are not as techno-savvy as most of you are, because I'm not. I would love a seminar where we could have, for example, how in the world am I going to decide without spending the money to do it and find out 6 months later that JAWS is better than Window Eyes or vice versa, or any number of other things, or what my note taker will or won't do, and how I can size that up. If we have any center that you can go to and be evaluated, I don't know about it, at least in Southern California, would it be possible, is there any interest in having some of you put on a thing where you could basically answer some of those basic questions or give enough information that we can make our own informed decisions or have some info rather than none?
You know, that's a very good question. I had the same question posed to me by an administrator at the university where I went to do some work a few weeks ago. And I started putting together a questionnaire of questions that you should ask yourself before purchasing a note taker.
I'm glad to publish that in the Real in Des Moines, California.
I'm sure you would be. So you want to fit it? You know, I'm going to send it to you to clean it up because, you know, I'm good at coming up with things, but I'm lousy at writing.
Editor.
Oh, you know the editor?
Yeah.
Ooh, cool. But anyway, Bonnie, there is something that I have been working on, questions to issues to consider before purchasing, deciding on a note taker or speech program or Braille printer. And I have been asking my wife for input on what to look for on CCTV stuff because she's partially sighted. I'm not. I don't use a CCTV anymore.
See, I think that would be really good, but one thing I know where I'm in need of help, and maybe I'm not the only one, is, yeah, I might know the right questions to ask, hopefully, but unless I know the products and what they will do,
mm-hmm.
I'm not in a good position, as I say, to make the most basic decisions on what screen reader and what the different programs
yes.
are. Should we hold out for XP as long as we can, or...
Okay.
Really,
I'll tell you what.
You know, all that kind of stuff.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. And as I told people before, and occasionally I get calls from people up and down the state asking me questions, and you may certainly do that. I have no problem. I'll be more than happy to help you out because I can understand the frustration. I have family members who are in the same position as you are. But because we're running out of time, if you could get in contact with me, I'll be more than happy to do what I can to help you out.
Great.
Okay? And thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.